with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, I guess I know what we got to talk about tonight. Born intern junior grade, Ferg on the air drums. A minute and a half past the hour, it's Tuesday. It is the 29th day of April, 2009. I want to thank a few people for stepping up and making the red ink a little thinner for the month of April here in the last couple of days. It made a big difference, a very big difference. Bless your hearts. It truly did, and it keeps things going here. You know, we got big dreams, we got big hopes, and sadly we have big bills to go with them. But it will get better. We just keep plugging along, knowing that you care enough for us to do so. All of us here, behind the mic and behind the people who are behind the mic. A whole new broadcast paradigm, the horn. Now, I say I know what we got to talk about because I'm just looking at what's been going on in my email inbox today, and it is fairly buzzing with the news of Arlen Specter. And I got to tell you, I'm not that excited. I'm just not. Sorry, having some discourse with Horn intern junior grade here that's necessitated a moment of silence. I'm answering questions as we go. But at any rate, I'm not all broke up about Arlen Specter because he seems not to have changed his stripes any at all. He, among other things, by talking about, you know what happened. Arlen Specter announced that he is now, by some miracle, a Democrat. After years and years of obstructing Democratic policy, of making it, he's gone mugwump and turned turtle. Now, you may say that's unfair of me, but bear with me. As he noted himself in his press release, he's still the same Arlen Specter he's always been. He could have a profound influence. He could have nation-changing impacts. But he won't. I have his press release right here. That accompanied his sudden change to the Democratic Party. He said it has become. He said I have talked to Republican leaders and office holders all over Pennsylvania, and I have carefully examined public opinion. And what he means by that is he saw some of the coverage of the teabagging, where they were carrying posters saying Benedict Allen. and accusing him of being a traitor for supporting the stimulus package, the stimulus bill. Although he didn't really support the stimulus bill. Call me a hard ass, all right? But I want the Republican Party to own their decisions. On the day after we found out that Arlen Specter demanded that $780 million be taken out of the stimulus package that would have gone to cover what? Yeah, flu pandemic preparedness. On the day that we find out, on the day after we find out that he was part and parcel of that, we welcome him with loving open arms into our party? No thanks. We've already got Bill Nelson. We've already got Ben Nelson. We've already got Blanche Lincoln. We've already got David Pryor. We've already got Mary Landrieu. We've already got Evan Bayh. What in the hell do we need with another wishy-washy moderate? Blech. Like I said, he could have nation-changing impact, but he does not want to have nation-changing impact. Arlen Specter wants to change the letter after his name so that he won't get his ass handed to him in a Republican primary by a freak named Pat Toomey. Pat Toomey's one of those, oh, I love the little fetuses types. He's Rick Santorum without the Santorum. And he doesn't believe that, you know, he's one of these people. Leave the poor corporations alone! Leave them alone! And he was on track to beat Arlen Specter like a red-headed stepchild in 2010 in the Republican primary in Pennsylvania. So suddenly, Arlen Specter is a Democrat. Because he doesn't think that the Democrats will run anybody against him who can beat him. And he thinks the Democrats are, oh my God, we've got our 60th Democrat in the House. Oh, I think I've got the vapors. This also from Arlen Specter's press release. My change in party affiliation does not mean that I will be a party line voter any more for the Democrats than I have been for the Republicans. Unlike Senator Jeffords' switch, which changed party control, I will not be an automatic 60th vote for cloture. For example, my position on employees' free choice card check will not change. In other words, he's going to put a D after his name to get past the primaries, but he's still the same old worker-despising Arlen Specter. Now, I don't know, I can't imagine that that statement came as any sort of a welcome revelation. I can't imagine that came as any sort of a welcome revelation to Rick Smith, our friend and co-host and colleague, who runs a show on the weekend. I can't imagine it at all. Rick Smith is a good labor man. Rick Smith knows the value that labor brings to the working class. Rick Smith is a member of organized labor himself. And for Arlen Specter to say, my position on employee free choice will not change. For him to say that, of course you do. That is such a stunningly hateful statement. It really, really is. Because, among other things, what that means is that Arlen Specter still does not wish to support the Constitution of the United States that guarantees freedom of association. Freedom of association is considered the freedom to form unions in the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. It is not so enumerated in the Constitution of the United States, but freedom of association is guaranteed under the First Amendment, and in fact the First Amendment should not be simply a life support system for the religion industry. But Arlen Specter does not think that working people have freedom of association under the First Amendment, because he wants to keep the scheme in place that keeps working people from forming unions at their desire. So pardon me if I don't get all tingly and excited about Arlen Specter coming to the Democratic Party. It's kind of like having Joe Lieberman come back to the fold, frankly. And it's not exactly inspiring. So that's where we begin. And those are just my basic thoughts on the issue. You are free to correct me, and you're free to disagree if you so wish. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Luke is with us now from East Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Now, I've heard a couple rumors, and I want you to tell me if you think they're true or if they're just me hearing it out of the hole in the ground. You know how it is.
I know, yeah.
There's any rumor, any truth to the rumor that Dick Cheney has invited Michael Steele to go hunting with him? Or is he on the suicide watch? We're trying to figure out which one it is. It could be the same thing.
Well, you know, Michael Steele's real hurt. You know somebody's real hurt when the likes of Michael Steele comes out and says that Arlen Specter wasn't raised right and his mama wouldn't approve. Yeah, honest to God, Luke, did you see that? Michael Steele invoked Arlen Specter's mama.
Oh,
I mean, and it's certainly worth it for the theatrics. But do you understand? Do you see what I'm saying when I say that Specter ain't exactly a Democrat?
No, you know, it's like I say, I would trust Bernie Sanders more than I would trust Arlen Specter. You know, because I know what Bernie stands for.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's like Arlen, if you wanted to change, why didn't you go to an independent? It's like you say, this is just Arlen trying to keep himself alive. Like you said, that the right wing, I think, had finally decided it's time to get rid of Arlen, and he read the paint on the wall that said "Get out." You know that we're gonna put our money behind somebody who's actually gonna be for them a big R Republican,
right?
And like say, because you wonder if this sort of thing, because you got to wonder who did they think was gonna run? Was Rendell gonna run or?
You know, I haven't seen what the Democrats have in store. I don't know if they were planning to run Rendell or not.
He's about the only one I could think of, you know, just of the national name. I'm sure there's probably somebody up in the area that's probably, you know, just as well known. But, you know, I mean, he was just the first one I thought of on the national stage from the Pennsylvania area. But, you know, like you say, this is a win, you know.
Yeah, I guess there's no little W wins if that's how we're gauging this, but frankly,
it's one of the things, like you say, it's about like having Lieberman have a member of the family come in. It's like, ew.
Yeah, and frankly, I wonder if Lieberman's in play now as a result of this. I wonder if the pressure's going to be picked up by the likes of Michael Steele and John Cornhole. I mean Cornyn bring Lieberman officially into the R part of the Senate.
That's what you want. I'd say in the next week or so, we'll say by maybe a week from Friday, I would say there's probably going to be some shakeup here and there, because you've got, like I said, you know, we were kidding about it. you got to think that some of the big hitters in the RNC are looking at Michael Steele going, we can do better.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised to see Michael Steele
resign.
Yeah, then well, a political auto de fe of sort.
I have to go see my family. Yes, that's right. I need to spend more time with the family.
Yeah, that my family. I hear my family calling. My dog ate my family. I gotta leave now.
Part about that is we get rid of him. We probably get Ken Blackwell, which is even more fun.
Well, you know what? That's the whole thing that Spector, and this much is true. Spector is correct. The Republican Party has narrowed its focus to the weirdest of its loony, violent, deranged, fringe base.
Well, then I'm wondering.
I mean, look, honest to God, Michelle Bachmann is suddenly emerging, Luke. Oh, my God. You know, she's emerging as a leader on the House side. Of the Republican Party?
Was it the DCC or one of the groups that now got a Michelle Bachmann page to keep up with all the things she says?
I don't know. How could you not? She's a walking stupid quote generator.
Oh, I tell you, I finally put together my list of the top 10 crazies, and she's the leader of the pack. I got to admit, and that's saying some. You know, when you got some of the people they've got in their party, but now let's look at it the other way. Now I'm just wondering though, if Arlen's going, do you wonder if they're out now? If the Democrats and the Republicans are going to start looking at Snow and Collins?
Well,
because the Republicans, you know, are probably sitting there looking at them, going, they're just waiting for them to go off.
And I wouldn't be surprised. They have publicly these hard, weird right wingers. Have publicly announced that they are going after Snow and Collins, and Olympia Snow or maybe Susan Collins. You know, I can't keep them straight. They're so-called moderate Republicans, and they're kind of all the same to me. Have come out and said that they are deeply disturbed by what happened, and that they're disturbed by what's going on inside the party. But this, Luke, this betrays, as far as I'm concerned, how out of touch those two are. With what the Republican Party is.
That's what I mean. I'm just wondering if this will kick them. I doubt that they would go Democrat, but I wonder if either or both of them might decide to become independent. Because, like I say, both of them, from where they're at, they could run as independents. I don't think it would hurt them a bit.
It would make more sense for them to be independents, frankly.
And you got to wonder if this starts, does that just sort of start the dominoes falling in the Republican Party to where it'll split apart, where you'll have the old... use the term, and I like it better later in his life, if you'll have the set of Reagan Republicans, and then you'll have the set of Goldwater Republicans.
And I guess, you know, Snow, Collins, Spector,
They're what now would be Goldwater Republicans, essentially, you know. I mean, that's what they were. I mean, talk about Senator Goldwater as he was at the end of his time. You know, where he'd moved quite a bit over to the center of the party.
Yeah,
compared to what came along after him.
But the thing is, how do they qualify as any way centrist when every time the chips have been down, they have voted the hard right wing Republican line? Even Spector, Spector breaking with the party over the stimulus bill is about the only thing you can point to, and that was enough to send the loopy right wing into an absolute knee jerk frenzy.
Well, I'll give him credit. You know, a few times, you know, when they've had judges, he's been one that'll say, you know, let's get them out of committee, let's let the whole group vote on them. He hadn't killed a whole bunch, you know, just inside the committee, not let anybody have some votes. Not as much as we'd like, but hey, you know, because I know sometimes he's made some votes on that judicial committee that the RNC just absolutely just wanted to get the gun and
you know, it's
the Elvis moment.
It's interesting. Excuse me, Luke.
Okay.
It's spring. We take we take sneeze breaks here on the horn.
Oh, that's okay.
It is interesting that in his press release, Spector said, "Since my election in 1980 as part of the Reagan Big Tent, the Republican Party has moved far to the right. Last year, more than 200,000 Republicans in Pennsylvania changed their registration to become Democrats." Well, the funny thing is, he's saying he came in as a Reagan Republican, and a Reagan Republican is nothing more than a ferocious wingnut.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I'm having a hard time getting over this because I guess it's very unchristian of me, but me not being a Christian, that doesn't really matter that much. It's very, because, see, I still hold Watergate against Arlen Specter.
Oh, I agree. And, I mean, I hold the stuff when Judge Thomas, when they put him on.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, how many problems can we attribute to Arlen Specter?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think this is a great thing, but I don't think it's a, I'd say, quote, a bad thing. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, sort of a no, kind of a null call, you know what I mean. It's kind of a, eh.
I'm being told by our news ninja Susan that there's been talk that Congressman Joe Sestak is interested in that seat. But what this, you know, if you take the approach of when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, then what this is an opportunity for the Democratic Party of Pennsylvania to flex its muscle.
And you know, I hate saying this about anybody in his place, but it's one of those things. I don't know how his family life is. You know, it's like, Arlen, you've gone through cancer. Why don't you just retire and enjoy what's left of your life? You know, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, I understand if you want to serve the public, that's fine. But you know what I mean? I don't. You know, you're getting to the age. It's time to step back and, you know, sit out on the porch with a rocking chair, have a good time.
And, but of course he doesn't want to do that because, well, I guess when you've lived like, been taken care of like a prize bull for, nearly, 30 years, you don't want to give that away.
Yeah.
But what I mean by flex its political muscle, this is an opportunity, for, among other organizations, the AFL-CIO in Pennsylvania to step up and say, Arlen, we gotta talk.
You want our help next in 2010, you got to talk to us.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because we can deliver, seeing how we're the teachers and the Teamsters and all the various and sundry.
Different groups. Now you're coalitions, so to speak. We're the big chunk of it.
We're now your constituents.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think I sent you something earlier with it attached to it. I don't think I heard it. Now, what then is this going to do to good old Norm? Is now the Republicans going to start backing up trucks of money saying, keep fighting, keep fighting? You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Because you got to wonder. I'm curious about that. I mean, I understand going through the state Supreme Court. I can understand that. That's part of what I understand is their law. But if you go to try to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, don't you have to show a cause, you know, why, you know, it's not just I want to go here because they said no below me. You've got to be able to show something.
But even, yeah,
you were treated unfairly.
It's a little frustrating. I expected to see as much, but it's a little bit frustrating, Luke, because the Minnesota Supreme Court set hearings, not decisions, hearings for June the 4th. And so that means if the hearing is June the 4th,
God, no matter how long that'll be.
We're probably talking, unless they do an expedited decision, we're probably talking about August, September.
I'm sitting there going, why wasn't this an expedited hearing? I mean, they should move out to the front of the list. You know, whatever you're doing, unless it's something, you know, that involves maybe like a death penalty or something like that, it's like, everybody else, hang on a minute, we got to work on this one first. Because that ought to move up to the top of their docket. You know, this is one we have to do right now.
But they didn't.
I know.
And so it's going to be waited. And, you know, what, I think 72% of Minnesotans surveyed now agree that it's time for Norm Coleman to wake up and wake up and smell the lutefisk.
Understandable, true. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's like, I think when he went past the point, and went to the state Supreme Court, I think that's where you sort of said, you know, you better win this because you've pretty much burned all your bridges. You ain't probably going to get elected in this state for pretty much anything now. That's pretty much his. I guess it's pretty much his last gasp.
But you have to wonder, don't you, Luke? What do you think? And this is pure speculation. I understand that. What do you think is the payoff for Norm Coleman? What's he get out of this for absolutely destroying his public reputation in Minnesota?
Well, like you said, I think one time, I'm sure they've got the job already lined up at one of the think tanks. He's probably going to be a member of the Heritage Foundation. You know what I mean? I'm sure he's already been told, you know, when all this is over and you finally lose and have to capitulate, we've already got a job lined up that'll pay you five times what you'd make as a senator.
But only if you lose for a long time. I mean, isn't Norm Coleman at this point approaching Washington General status?
Oh, no, he's past that. Oh, at least the Washington Generals win occasionally.
No, I was talking about the team that played the Globetrotters.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, even they won a few times.
Yeah, they were allowed to, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's getting to the point with this thing. Every time Norm goes to a court, he's lost numbers. I mean, every time they've gone into different courts, you know, it started out, what was it? Al was up by, it wasn't even 100. Then it went to like 225, and I think the last one I saw was like 312.
I know. He keeps losing votes. By the time this thing's all over with, he may well be from Iowa.
I was going to say, he may, if they keep doing this at this rate, Al may win by a full percentage point. May have to end this problem then.
Funny. And by the way, I did get the story earlier today about Rush Limbaugh and his Humane Society ads.
Oh, which I'm sitting here going, I'm sorry, there's something about this that smells.
Well, it does, but by the same token, I also got a giggle out of it, and just the backstory on it. Rush Limbaugh has started, he cut some PSAs for the Humane Society.
And apparently the NRA does not like
it. And the NRA and all the hunters, I don't like it because a Humane Society has a radical leftist agenda to keep people from hunting.
I'm sorry, boys. They ain't PETA.
Yeah, I think they are. They're confusing their organizations. But I love the fact that this may be perfect because that 20-ton gas bag Limbaugh has done got himself in an argument with a bunch of heavily armed, pissed off right wingers.
You know, it's one of them things. You're just sitting there going, you're just going, how did this happen? I mean, you know, as much as we, you know, we'll say every vile thing about it, we got to admit the guy's got a brain. You know what I mean? And you got to think somewhere down the line, it's like you had to know that when you cut this, that, you know, like I say, this is going to be like throwing gasoline on a fire to put it out.
But I do love the fact that, what's her name, Greta Van Susteren, the plastic face.
Yeah.
She had him on the program and said, well, who do you admire? And he said, huh? I'm having a brain freeze. I'm having a brain freeze. Well, you admire the Humane Society, don't you? No.
You know,
it's just delightful to watch these people pretzelize themselves.
Oh, like I say, the best one, though, I'm still waiting to see how this does come out, because I've been watching Overman, and he had the guy on last night that was one of the instructors, you know, who teaches the how to resist torture thing. They were talking about how you know, that if he really wanted to, said he could get Sean to the point where he'd say, Countdown's my favorite show. But if he, you know, said if you gave me enough time, said I could take care of that problem. So I'm just wondering how that, because I think that's a good one. I think this is one that Keith's got going now, and he's got his hooks in this one, and we should all sometimes I think hunt up whatever the email address is, and we should all write Charles Grodin and tell him thank you.
Well, has Olbermann, you watch more frequently than I do because you have access to a television.
Yeah.
But has Olbermann started a countdown or anything? It's now been 6 days since Sean Hannity said he'd be waterboarded for the troops. Still nothing.
Well, he keeps bringing it up, but he hadn't done anything along those lines yet. But now the new one, I think, is what is he'll pay $1,000 a second. And he'll double it if Sean tells people that it is torture.
For the troops.
Yeah. Well, I think what it is, it's something, when he was talking about it, with LeGros, and it was some veterans family thing. I don't know what the exact name of it was, but who they were talking about. And apparently that's who he was talking about donating money to. So apparently it is a legitimate organization he was talking about. Oh, did you also see the story? I saw this today where of the, I think it was like 19 they've had come in so far, of the Dovers, that like a dozen of the families have wanted them to photograph.
Yeah, the families have not only consented but requested. Did I read that right?
Yeah. The only problem was they had one of them where they said that they had when one of them came in, the only person there was like the AP photographer. And it's shameful that it's dropped off that much. It's like CNN and MSNBC ought to have somebody, whoever the local affiliate is.
There ought to be somebody on standing watch.
I think
that's honorable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, this is the cost, folks. I mean, you got to, you know, we talk about it, but like I say, that's the reality. You sit there and see it happen.
I know you guys would rather be off chasing the latest missing white woman story, but sometimes we have to do the right thing, and the right thing is to make sure that there is a crew there for the families.
And like I say, even if, you know, if AP and CNN, all of them have to get together and just get one person, you know, do it as a, what do they call it, I can't think what it is, you know, when you have one camera there for the whole group, the full, you know, a feed for all of them. And if you take it, that's fine, but at least I'd have somebody there at least filming it every time one of them came in. But, you know, that's just one of the things that, I mean, you know, that's something C-SPAN ought to carry. You know what I mean? Film it, you know, just him taking him off the C-130 or whatever it is.
Right.
It shouldn't be more than 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, you guys, and the C-SPAN could find 5 or 10 minutes to stick that in every day. Do it in the morning if you have to during their Washington Journal.
But, you know, not just C-SPAN, Luke. I mean, the CNN, Fox, Headline News, MSNBC, CNBC, all these outfits were part and parcel of the big rah-rah running up to this stinking war, and they were part and parcel of the reason those boys are coming home in boxes.
Oh, yeah. I agree. But
they have a moral, I know it, the corporate news and moral probably don't go together very well, but they have a moral obligation to be there.
I agree. They do. Everybody had those nice embedded reporters. I'd take each one of those reporters and tell them, guess what, you're going to serve up in Dover for a week. Each one of you, we're going to go through the whole list of you.
And I can't remember that freak, but there was a guy on a video phone on the race to Baghdad hanging his camera out the window of some Humvee or some such. And he said, this, and I remember seeing it because I couldn't sleep, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was live. And he said, well, Chip, let me tell you, this is some of the best fun I've ever had. I want that man there for everybody that comes home.
That's what they ought to do. They ought to go down the list of better reporters and say, you're going to serve a week up here covered it. And said, when it does, I want you to go up in any old February. If they'll let you film it, I want you to film it all the way from when they offload it to from the C-130 to wherever they take it. I'm sure there's some hangar or something. I mean, I want you walking 20 feet behind them with a camera.
Exactly. Luke, great talking to you, brother.
All right, bud, you have a good evening.
All right, you too. Later. Bye now. In East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. Hey, welcome to the program,
hi,
Susan. Sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm laughing my head off picturing Hannity's head exploding.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not like it would be messy or anything would splatter around because there's nothing under that fabulous haircut.
There's nothing in it, exactly. A few little fun goodies. First of all, Mitch McChinless has said that it's going to, this is bad for the country. Don't ask me how.
What? Specter?
Yeah, Specter switching parties.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, have you been up to Daily Coast today?
No, I have not.
Okay. There is an article up there. It's memo to GOP. Seat Franken or we'll keep Specter's committee seats. That's the bottom line. Seat Al Franken and give him his committee assignments now, or we'll block a new organizing resolution that would let you reassign Specter's previously Republican committee seats to one of your own.
And, you know, that does raise some interesting questions, because Specter, you know, he's not some backbench Republican. He's going to want some, and there, you know, the Obama administration said, wow, you know, we had nothing to do with this. But somebody had something to do with it.
Yep.
And then part of that something means that he's going to get him a committee chair or two, doesn't it?
He might. He was. They asked him during that press conference about one committee. Basically, it's going to be figured on when he was voted in, the seniority. And then they're going to have to start dickering with anybody who came in after him.
Well, couldn't we finally get around to stripping Joe Lieberman of his seat and give Arlen Homeland Security?
Oh God, wouldn't? No, well, you see, then we'd have Lieberman over with the Republicans.
That's fine.
Which frankly wouldn't hurt my feelings. As far as I'm concerned, I would say, unless this guy is willing to vote for employee free choice, use him and discard him.
Well, I know that there's got to be, and this is, again, speculating, so I ought to be careful about using I know. But I believe, this is an appropriate use of the word believe, I believe there have probably been several conference calls among the AFL-CIO today.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
Especially given the fact that his hey, look at me, I'm a Democrat press statement, specifically said he was going to continue to put the shiv to working people in this country.
Yeah. Well, even with people coming up there to raise money for him and people coming up there to campaign for him, it will do nothing without labor.
No, absolutely not.
And if labor stays home, the electorate stays home, and he goes down.
Because Pennsylvania still has a fairly strong organized labor base.
And Rendell has to know that.
You would assume so, yes.
So there has to be something going on. Either they're planning on using him and dumping him, or he's planning on somewhere down the pipe switching again, which, let's face it, he does with great panache.
Well, I, you know, it would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in those background conversations.
Oh God, wouldn't it just?
But you know, for Specter to claim, you know, first of all, in that press statement, I don't know if you saw it or not, Susan, but he quotes John Kennedy, and that's one of those moments because he was an enabler. He was an enabler of Watergate. He was an enabler of Iran-Contra, and he was an enabler, as Luke pointed out, of Clarence Thomas. And for him to quote John Kennedy saying, sometimes party asks too much, party wasn't asking too much when it asked him to sleaze and slime Anita Hill, whom time has shown to have been the wronged party in that debate.
Oh, it's worse than that. He is the author of the magic bullet. He is the enabler.
Yeah, he's that
of
too.
The cover up. Yeah, the top of my head damn near came off.
Yeah.
Because this is the man who came up with that cockamamie theory of a bullet going in one direction and then going in another direction just to account for a single shooter.
Cockamamie is an appropriate word there, I do believe, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be, you know, restrained here.
Circumspect. You're trying to be circumspect.
Yes. On a lighter note, would you care? Bachman has done it again.
Oh, yeah, I got that. That's in the list.
The interesting coincidence.
Yes. Yes. Here, let's go ahead and do that. Hold on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at a photograph of her eyes right now. She's got those Humphrey Bogart Captain Queeg eyes. Well, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled them. I caught them with the strawberries. Rawr.
Yeah.
She's nuts. Yeah, let's.
This woman's.
Yeah, she gave an interview to Pajamas TV. Pajamas TV. Those people have enough money to burn a wet elephant. Honest to God, and look at what they do. And there's a classic example. There's Pajamas TV, and this isn't the poor, poor, pitiful me part of the program, but there's Pajamas TV that does just right-wing blech. And what they did is they went to the right wing and they said, hey, we want to start a right wing TV internet thingy. And the right wing went, here's some money.
Yeah, here's money. Buy the bucket load.
Yeah. Don't worry about where you spend it. Just come back when you need more. And, well, you know what the other side of that argument is. But anyway, she gives an interview to Pajamas TV. And she says the following. Crazy.
I find it interesting that it was back in the 1970s that the swine flu broke out then under another Democrat president, Jimmy Carter. And I'm not blaming this on President Obama. I just think it's an interesting coincidence.
The hell does that mean, Susan?
It means she's crazy. The last swine flu outbreak was under Gerald Ford. Last time I looked, was a Republican.
No, see, they've forgotten Ford. Jimmy Carter was president from the moment that Richard Nixon stepped down until Ronald Reagan screwed us with the October surprise. Yeah.
The woman is cracked. I will give her this. She has the integrity of her insanity. You know, whatever is going to come out of that woman's mouth, it's going to be crazy. She doesn't shift and blow in the wind like Spectre does.
No, she just stays crazy.
Yeah, she's
terminal.
Right-wing nut. Yeah, she's a right-wing nut, and she ain't going to ever be anything but a right-wing nut. Spectre, you never know which way he's going to turn.
Well, and there's some other Michelle Bachmann news today as well, Susan. You remember the audio that John played and then I played again last night of her? Carbon dioxide is a natural... That one?
Yes.
Well, apparently, if you get up on the floor and you just, as Earl Blumenauer pointed out, if you get up on the floor and just make stuff up, you get a promotion in the Republican Party. You know, it's the Medal of Freedom syndrome, I guess. Because she's got herself a new plum appointment. Care to guess?
Oh.
I'll help. Michelle Bachmann announced yesterday that she is a proud member of a new right-wing group. Michelle Bachmann is now, after that stunning display of ignorance, mendacity, and just plain old-fashioned back-in-the-kitchen crazy, she is now a member of, wait for it, the House GOP American Energy Solutions Group.
Oh, bar.
Hagapaiska, I think is how that's pronounced. Hagapaiska. Yes. They are going to work on crafting Republican solutions to lower energy prices for American families and small businesses. She said in announcing her appointment to this, I can't imagine what their meetings must be like. Pass me a Danish and give me some liquid cold spread on it. Yum, yum. Yesterday she announced her appointment and said, my colleagues and I on the Energy Solutions Working Group are... Have you noticed we started having working groups instead of committees?
Yeah.
Because committee kind of got a bad name, didn't it? Because you can't get anything done by a committee. A committee can't even decide whether to go Mexican or Chinese for lunch.
My colleagues and I on the Energy Solutions Working Group are dedicated to an all-of-the-above approach that will increase the supply of clean, affordable, American-made energy today and encourage investment for newer, more energy-efficient technologies for the future. I will also continue my fight against energy tax increases as proposed in the Democrats' energy proposal for Minnesotan families and small business. Remember, this is the woman who told the
non-existent one.
Yeah, right, the non-existent tax. But this is the woman who told Minnesotans to go get their guns and load them for Democrats.
Yeah. Hey, Michelle, I got an idea. Why don't you come out here to Oregon and go right across the river to Washington, and there's this really natural phenomena I want you to investigate. Since it's natural, you won't be harmed when you climb up into the lava dome of Mount St. Helens.
And get a big old lung full.
Yeah, just take a big old lung full of all that sulfur dioxide.
Yeah.
But it's natural. It's from the earth.
I came away with the idea that the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is the most perfect place on the planet to drill.
Actually, the most perfect place on the planet to drill is these people's heads, because there's obviously a black hole there.
No. See, if you started opening up Republican skulls, you would have such a massive carbon dioxide release that we'd go to 500 parts per million almost overnight. Be careful what you ask for, Susan.
Yes, that is too true. And one last thing. You mentioned last night the gentleman on Oberman who offered to help with Oberman's waterboarding of Sean Hannity. You know, he offered to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Oberman could pay $1,000. This is catching on. Stephanie Miller is offering to start kicking in money, too, for however many seconds he lasts.
Oh, that's a little shameless bootstrapping, isn't it?
Hey, boy, she plans on marrying him anyway, so whatever.
Well, that's true. She is madly in love with Keith Olbermann.
But, you know, just the fact that she's willing to cough up whatever money she can, cough up. And I think it would be great if everybody could start, hey, Sean, we got more money for you.
For the troops, Sean, for the troops.
Are you going to be a man this time? Sure you've got round things between, well, in a certain good.
He's easy there, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was being nice.
Nah, yes, you were. Yeah, true.
Don't want to do anything to cause problems with the little one.
Yep, there we go.
He probably knows more than I do. He's a boy. What do you expect?
No, Jesus, what a boy. Yeah.
Anyway, I shall let you go. I'm sure you got blinkies. And I'm going to go back to, oh, Lord. But I couldn't believe that Mitch McChinless thinks, this is bad for the country. It's just, that's the first thing you see on Huffington Post when you pop it up.
And, these are some vindictive SOBs. I bet you Arlen Specter won't even get so much as a Christmas card now. He's off the list!
I was wrong. He said it's a threat to the country.
Oh, well, that's even more fun.
Oh,
Arlen Specter, threat to national security.
Yeah. Sebelius has been confirmed as HHS secretary, 65-31.
Well, good.
Well, crimping time.
But the wing nuts are still having a hissy.
And you know, and just to give you an idea, I loved this. I saw this earlier today. Just to give you an idea of how, well, no, that's not HHS. That's somebody. But no, okay, I'll get to it later. No worries. It wasn't directly on point for Sebelius. But yeah, I'm glad she did get confirmed. But you know, not for the want of weirdo right wingers everywhere screaming, "She eats little fetuses."
Did you hear what Limbaugh said to about Specter?
No, that had to be good.
Take McCain and his daughter with you.
You know, we might take the daughter.
Yeah, she's at least
that. I think she's just waiting for Dad to die, and then she'll be a Democrat.
Yeah. Olympia Snow says Specter's abandonment of the GOP is, quote, devastating.
Yes. That means she doesn't have anybody to have lunch with anymore, except Susan Collins.
This is going to be fun.
I mean, you know, the rest of the Republicans in the Senate, you can't sit down and have lunch without having to pray over the food and have a frenzy of strychnine drinking and snake handling. Before you can eat. And frankly, it just gets tiresome after a while. And so Olympia Snow and Susan Collins are down to lunching with each other.
Well, why do you think I make it a point not to be around my relatives very often?
Same sort of thing?
Because my husband's sons are all right-wing nuts, and they're all heavy-duty right-wing Christians. And they all have to pray before they even...
I know. Susan, have a wonderful evening.
You too, and love to Agnes.
All right, thanks. You have a good night.
Say hi to Berg.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's see, Juanita. Hey, Juanita, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
No, I'm just dandy.
Well, I just called about a few things, mostly about the swine flu, but I wanted to say something about The View. I thought it was going to be on today. They're going to discuss about Hannity.
Oh, really?
He's going to be weatherboarded. I guess it's going to be on sometime this week. And
now, did you say weatherboarded or waterboarded?
I think I said weatherboarded. I meant.
Does that mean we're going to wall him up inside some new construction down there and wait for the next hurricane to come along? I like that idea, Juanita.
See, my heart was in the right place. Or wrong, whatever. Oh, either one would be fine with me.
Yeah, me too.
But, or both. But, anyway, Barbara just got back from Argentina. Barbara Walters just got back from. Mm-hmm.
And what was she doing down there?
I think she was interviewing, Chavez, but she was talking about how beautiful it was down there, and did you see people dancing everywhere, doing the tango, you know, like they're happy, you know. Elizabeth just sat there and didn't say a word.
You know, that's when she's best.
Oh, yeah. She probably didn't know what to come up with, but another thing about Norm Coleman, one thing is that's good is he has some eggs thrown at him.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody went to his home or something and threw them at him. Yep.
What a waste of perfectly good eggs.
He put out a complaint on it. I don't know who, but anyway.
Oh, did he get his little feelings hurt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ain't no telling what people are going to start throwing next. But years ago, when Nixon went down to South America, he got eggs thrown at him, and he said, well, they must not be very hungry. They got eggs to throw.
Well, of course, I remember seeing the presidential limousine pelted with eggs the day that former leader was inaugurated.
Yeah, I didn't even know that until I saw Michael Moore's movie.
Well, you weren't supposed to see that.
Yeah, that was how I saw it. But anyway. But I want to say, did you say somebody said that the swine flu happened when Carter was president?
Yeah, that was what Michelle Bachmann said today.
No, what happened?
She said she thought it was a stunning coincidence. Yeah, you know that, and I know that. But Michelle Bachmann is dumber than a box of rocks.
Well, sometimes I don't know if they're dumb or just doing it on purpose. But I guess you don't expect her to do it. But anyway, I think sometimes they know exactly what they're doing. But I can tell you that was during the election, they were both running for office. Ford was still president, and he got a lot of people didn't want to get it, the shot. And he got the shot, but Carter didn't. Carter said he didn't think he needed it. And he was right, because that it was the biggest nothing that ever happened. Everybody was going to get that swine flu.
Yeah, I remember two things back then, and they may have been somewhat close together in time. It seems like they are in my addled brain now. Two great big nothings, the 1975 swine flu outbreak, and here's one for you. Do you remember Comet Kohoutek?
Yeah, I went out and tried to see it.
Yeah, Comet Kohoutek was going to slam into the Earth and just blast us into a million pieces.
Oh, it's going to be really beautiful, too.
Huge, huge. Nobody could see it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and of course, wasn't Gerald Ford getting his swine flu inoculation long about the same time he was wearing his whip inflation now win button?
Gosh, I don't know.
That's the one I remember. A whole news conference dedicated to a red button with white letters that said WIN, and that's how we were going to. That was the Republican plan to fix the economy.
I was doing a lot of working then, but I was paying as much attention as I could. Anyway, I was really for Carter, boy. But anyhow, that's the truth about it. Now, where I worked at a hospital, and the thing that happened, people had already died. Some older people had died after they got it. And I guess that was okay. Then a lot of young people started getting crippled, and a lot of those people are still in wheelchairs today from that Guillain-Barre disease, which is a neuropathy. It's a form of neuropathy or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's akin to a lot of different things, chronic fatigue and so forth. But anyway, I've just recently been diagnosed after many years of wondering what the heck was wrong with me, that I had peripheral, and then this comes out and makes me think maybe I just got later on, because if they hadn't caught it, I would have just progressed worse and worse. But anyway, it's caused by different things.
Worth remembering, and as we go forward dealing with this new outbreak that seems considerably more real than what happened at Fort Dix, New Jersey in 1975-1976, it's worth remembering what the Congress does every time it has a chance to deal with a vaccine, and that is create a sweetheart immunity deal for the corporate pharmacology poisoners who are gonna hurt and kill people.
Well, when we have had that, we said we would let the bosses get theirs, and if they didn't die, then we would get the shots. So we ended up getting them, and because they said, well, if you get sick, and you don't take a shot, you won't get paid for being out sick at all. So it's kind of like, you almost had to. That's the way some of them would do. But I just hope that it will clear over like that did.
Well, I hope it does too. But they're disease authorities have said. Let me see if I can find the exact quote here. I'm getting it here real quick. The Centers for Disease Control said that deaths are likely in the United States. And of course, I guess that goes without saying. I mean, people die from just ordinary annual flu outbreaks every year. But when they say that this outbreak is going to result in deaths, I take that to mean something more profound than the average. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope so, too. The only problem is that what I said, you know, like is, I think the best I remember, they didn't say the swine flu started in this continent. I think it said it started overseas, but I don't remember anybody dying from the swine flu unless they did overseas.
No, there were 17, was it 17 cases or 17 deaths at Fort Dix, New Jersey?
In the 70s?
Yeah.
Okay. But I know that, and that was from the flu? Or was that from the shot?
No, that was from the flu itself.
Yeah.
Either 17 cases or 17 deaths.
There's probably more people that got that crippling disease, you know, immediately than the people that died from the shot. And there are people still living now. They're still in wheelchairs after all that time. But anyway, it kind of was, in a way, it was kind of like the, not as bad. It was recognized a lot quicker than what they call it, the disease that happened to our troops over in Arabia, Saudi Arabia, when they were in had the Iraq War.
Yes.
What was that called?
Isn't that Gulf War syndrome?
Yeah, I had a friend that I work with that got that. You know, they tried to tell them it was all in their mind for a long time. And he was a very active person. He was like in his, I think he was late 30s or early 40s, had a young one daughter under 10 and a teenage daughter, and they did karate. He was in the National Guard. And he just is completely crippled. He has to have something to help him lift up his arm.
And the thing is, our people were subjected to so many different horrors over there. One of them was the anthrax vaccine that turned out to be pure poison that people had to take as a, you know, they would have been literally court-martialed if they had refused a legitimate order to take that poison.
Right.
And then there's, you know, then there's the simple, not so simple matter of the depleted uranium. See, and that's the thing with the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. And apparently we didn't learn any lessons from Vietnam, it is that war repercussions, war is the plop in the pond, and what happens 20, 30, and 40 years after are the ripples spreading outward from the plop.
Yeah.
And we're gonna ultimately find out, I suspect, Juanita, that we will find out that the Iraq War is the deadliest, and the Afghanistan wars, they are the deadliest wars in which the United States has ever engaged, because there is not a single human being who is coming back from there that has not been exposed to some toxin that has been generated as a result of the unholy matrimony between corporate America and the Pentagon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the deaths are going to continue to ripple out of Iraq just as they ripple out of the former Yugoslavia as a result of depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's the children there, and it's the personnel who were using the artillery shells themselves inside tanks, in, stationary or semi-stationary artillery crews that had to breathe that crap, and it ain't good for you.
Well, you know something that I was always stuck with me when I, about the Gulf War, you know, the first war under Daddy Bush, and, is that they had such old equipment. They didn't have anything, you know, they didn't have a bunch of new, all the money that's been spent on defense. They didn't have, and then it was the same thing all over again with this war. The same thing. Old equipment, not enough equipment. They ran out of bullets in the shock and awe thing. They ran out of something to drink. I know this firsthand. I mean, it's my hearsay, but it's firsthand to me. And, but it was, it doesn't go to them. That's where I want it to go to.
Yeah, to the, you want them to own it. It's theirs. It's their baby. They need to bath it.
And they pay for it. When they get into something like this, they pay through the nose for it.
Yeah, by the they, I meant the people that came up, that created this nightmare.
Oh yeah, oh in the different way, yeah. I'm talking good.
But see, that's another example, Juanita, of the political dynamic in this country. Republicans start wars. Republicans refuse to adequately fund services for returning veterans. And then the administration changes, and it's all left for you and me to fix.
Yeah. I was just turned off C-SPAN not too long before I tuned into you, where in Congress the Republicans are yang to the Democrats, but the Democrats are letting them have it.
Good.
You know, they were kind of, well, you had it for 2 years. Now you got it all. You got it whole. You got the whole thing. You know, that guy from Georgia that always says, I'll never forget 9/11. He didn't say that today. And then the guy that's head of the Republicans from California, making their little smart remarks. But we have some people standing up for us. In this case, I didn't hear very much, but when the Republicans kept on and on and on and on, they wanted to interrupt the Democrats. Give me some time. And finally the guy said, you know, I'm not giving you any more time. And then he finally did give him a little time. He just made this little insulting remark. He says, your time is taken back. But then the other guy would keep giving him time. The other Republicans. You know, I kind of got an idea about, you know, how they like to call us Democrats,
mm-hmm.
The Democrat Party. Why don't we just call them the Repub Party?
that's why I came up with Repig Licking.
Yeah, well, I like that.
And now, especially in the era of swine flu, Repig Licking.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Really,
well, you know,
points out how toxic they are.
It's got nothing to do with the swine. The doctors that I've heard talking about, so it's got nothing to do.
Well, there's all kinds of hazy evidence. I read an article that Lottie provided me, you know, our chat room and forum moderator, Lottie, one of the smartest men on the Internet. An article he found that just blew my mind. It turns out, you know, another one of those stories that isn't reported in the American for-profit media.
Yeah.
It turns out a manufacturer named Baxter International, they manufacture flu vaccines.
Yeah.
So they sent a batch of flu vaccine to Austria.
Yeah.
Well, there was a problem.
What happened?
The flu vaccines were contaminated with H5N1 human avian flu.
Oh, boy.
So they were sent to Austria. Austria doesn't know any better and turns it around and sends it to the Czech Republic. And the Czech Republic tests it by injecting it into ferrets, and the ferrets died. Or as we like to say, we folks down south like to say, them ferrets up and died.
Yeah.
They up and died.
Up and died, yeah.
And then the Czechs looked up and went, this ain't right. And it turned out that, and Baxter couldn't, Baxter Labs, which is a huge, huge for-profit illness company, they wouldn't say what happened. At first they just said, we don't know. How did that bird flu get in the flu vaccine? Trade secrets. That's what it's trade secrets how we got it in there. And then a little bit of heat got turned up on them, and Baxter said, well, what we did is we accidentally shipped some pure bird flu. Instead of the vaccine. But the fact of the matter is, Baxter then came back around and said that, the virus material was supposed to contain a seasonal flu virus and it was contaminated after human error. But the
that's their excuse.
Right. But the problem is, among other things, The Canadian press has pointed out that mixing viruses is actually a scientific lab process called reassortment, and it's actually how one goes about creating a pandemic virus.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And, you know, sooner or later, somebody, you know, there are going to be people, I don't know what I would, what does a mother or a father do under these circumstances if you lose a child or a mother or a father or someone in compromised physical condition to the, you know, do you just grab your personal pitchfork and your personal torch and start heading for the corporate headquarters of Baxter Labs?
Yeah.
Or any one of these big pharma outfits?
Mm-hmm.
Because see, there will be big profits made. I mean, you've talked, Juanita, about what your experience was with the swine flu vaccine back in the 70s, and what you think may be the ongoing after effects thereof. What do you do? I mean, how do you? Because there's going to be a ton, and there were tons of profits made on the swine flu vaccine in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but this does sound different. It does. You know, it's, sometimes you feel like it's scary when you think they'll say, well, now if you get the flu and you need to stay home for two days after you get the flu. You know, in other words,
you need to stay home till 2 days after all symptoms have disappeared.
Right. Now they say we've got one case here in Florida, in Orlando, they think. How did they come up with that suddenly? I mean, are they saying to the doctors, be on the lookout, or I guess?
Yeah, they do. They post bulletins to all physicians through the state medical organizations, and then there are reporting requirements.
But if it got anything like the one at the turn of the century, now my folks told me a lot about that. You know, where everybody in the family was, you know, down, you know, and they had to have people come and look in on. There were a few people that didn't get that flu. I don't know what kind it was, but
that was the Spanish influenza outbreak of 1918.
And now, like my daddy, and I've heard more about them that side. His grandmother, she didn't get it. She took care of it. She just went from farm to farm, you know, taking care of people. And then when one of her daughters got better, she helped her out. And if it wasn't for them, these people, like my folks' family, they wouldn't have had anything to eat. You know, they weren't able to go. It wasn't because they were forbidden. They weren't able to go.
They were physically debilitated.
Yes. It was that bad. And there was like six children in that family. And the daddy had died, but anyway, it just, now if it got like that, God only knows how we could cope with it. I don't know.
I don't either, but we are $780 million to the poorer for being able to deal with it, thanks to Arlen Specter.
Yeah. I got a little bit of a theory on what that could happen. He could run as a Democrat. He's supposed to run this time, right?
Yeah, 2010.
Okay, he could run as a Democrat, and then the run against the Republican and maybe lose, because people are fed up with him from the past.
Yeah,
and get another Republican in there.
Well, that's the fear, and that's also what Arlen Specter's counting on. He's counting on support from the Democratic Party, out of fear that another. You know, Pat Toomey makes, if you can imagine, this hardcore, bizarre, all fetuses are people too, you know, leave the poor corporations alone, right-wing weirdo Pat Toomey.
People too.
He makes, He actually makes Rick Santorum look like a blooming liberal. So Arlen Specter is counting on Pennsylvanians to back him as the lesser of he's not running as a Democrat so much as Arlen Specter is running as the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a conniver.
Oh yeah, the pure and simple, a really sleazy one at that.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, it's good to hear from you, dear.
You too.
You have yourself a wonderful night.
Well, stay well.
Wash them hands.
Yep.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
View correspondent Juanita. And let's roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Vince.
What's up?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. How about you?
Not a lot. Just replying to Juanita here. They're politicians. I thought sleazy and conniving was kind of the job description.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
You know, it's kind of like, wow, I'm surprised that spider bit me. Duh. nothing against Juanita, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we've got our politicians, and we hope that they are sleazy and conniving to get what we want or need, but we still expect them to be sleazy and conniving. That's kind of the prerequisite for the job.
Well, it
is. I'm not a politician.
Yeah, it'd make it kind of tough to get through the day, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I've already pretty much had my piece on the whole Specter thing in the chat room. I mean, yeah, he's sleazy and conniving, and yeah, I mean, I'm sure this is primarily to save his own butt, but you know what? We're a big enough tent that we can deal with that. I think it's one of the strengths of this party that we can accommodate someone like Arlen Specter. We allow, even though we disagree with him and think that, you know, he's being purely opportunistic, you know, as long as he's, you know, willing to be better of a benefit for us than, you know, a hindrance, then, you know, I think we can put up with a little bit
well,
of that.
But, like Vince, do you think that the people of Pennsylvania, do you think that, you know, folks who work for a living and benefit from labor representation, organized labor, do you think they can do enough arm twisting to make it clear to him that he needs to find the foot of the cross on employee free choice real fast?
Well, that's kind of the whole thing about politics, isn't it? Those are all his constituents now, and you know, if it's as big a deal to them as we hope that it is, then hopefully they're going to put the pressure on to say, okay, look, dude, you want to be in our party, that's all well and good and that's fine, so you're going to listen to our concerns, and these are our concerns. And if he does his job, now, granted, maybe I'm just naive here, and I do understand this is a fairly big if, but if he does his job, then he should come around. You know, but, you know, it's all a wait-and-see thing. We're just going to have to wait and see what he does. I mean, he's in there now, and I think we got to give the guy at least the benefit of the doubt and see what he's going to do before we start crucifying and whatnot. Now, if he turns out to be just another Lieberman, then you know what? I'm all for voting his butt out. But, you know, if he keeps Toomey out of there, yeah, I'm willing to put up with a little bit. Like I said, I think we're a big enough tent that we can handle it.
And I am trusting Vince. I'm trusting organized labor in PA to be to be strong enough to get Specter to the foot of the cross, because the source of his opposition to employee free choice is that we're in hard economic times, and we've got to, and both sides have to come to the table. Okay, and that is a specious argument if ever there was one. What it boils down to is Arlen Specter was willing to support employee free choice when George Bush was president because he knew George Bush would veto it. And it made him look good with Pennsylvania moderates and Democrats. But now that it has a chance to actually become law, he's not so for it anymore. Because, see, remember, and I'm not trying to just be a complete downer, but remember, it's not just Arlen Specter that's moving over to the Democratic side of the Senate. He's bringing all of his corporate, toxic, polluter, profiteering, the bloodthirsty pack pals with him, too.
Well, that is unfortunately the name of the game. You know, frankly, I think we can blame someone a little higher up for that right now, but, you know, that's an entirely different argument altogether. you know, I'm willing to take a wait and see approach on this. That's kind of where I am. I mean, you've got to follow the money. And the simple fact of the matter is he has now cut himself off from pretty much all the big Republican money. And he's going to have to start raising his campaign funds from somewhere. And if that results in a moderation of his views, well, again, that's what politics is.
But see, I don't know that he's cut himself off from his big Republican money. Because it's big corporate money, and big corporate money will go wherever they think the wind of power is blowing. What he's cut himself off from, he's cut himself. See, this whole thing, Vince, goes to the. It centers on teabagging. This is a teabagging affair, and this has to do with people calling for his head, and on teabagging day. And teabagging the Pat Toomey announcing his candidacy that day. I mean, the weirdo right wings have had an absolute frenzy. They sent people to scream, literally, they sent people to Spector's office to scream at his staff. Remember, just like the Republicans did in December 2000 in Dade County?
I know that they did that because I actually called them up earlier today just to, you know, basically tell him what I told you, that I don't agree with a lot of his positions, but hey, welcome to the party. Hope you play nice. And just on the off chance, I asked the staffer who picked up the phone, how's it been? And she's like, well, we've gotten some folks like you, and we've gotten a lot of people who've been yelling and screaming at us. And I said, don't let them bother you.
Yeah, forget about it, Jake. It's Wingnut Town. Doing okay otherwise, Vince?
Yeah, for the most part, although I do want to touch on something else. The Spector thing wasn't really what I wanted to comment about. The thing I really wanted to comment about is I find this very, very, very funny that they're saying, you know, if you feel like you have flu symptoms, then you need to stay at home and wait until you're over the flu and wait for 2 days until after you finish having symptoms. That's all well and good, and it's good advice. Only who's going to tell my employer that? Because I don't know about anybody else. But even in a union job, if my butt doesn't show up to work, even if I have sick time after in my job after a year, you accrue sick time. Even if you accrue sick time, you can take time out and you can sick out and you get paid for it. It's still considered unexcused, and they will count it against you when performance reviews and everything come around. So, you know, if my job is on the line or if I'm, you know, working to, you know, move up the food chain in the company – from that aspect, that's not really something I can afford to do. And I really wish somebody would come out from, you know, the political end of it, from this administration, and say, you know, look, you can't be doing that. It's a health hazard.
You know what? If I were you, Vince, I would
policy.
I'd be having a conversation, you know, not because you're looking to make a ruckus or anything, but I'd just raise the issue with my shop steward if I were you. You know, your union rep?
They're useless as... Yeah, no, I know, and I hate to say it, but my union rep is about as useless as teats on a bowl, and I'm working to do something about that right now. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a slow-moving process. You know, basically, whenever I raise the issue, the runaround I get, unfortunately, from our union folks is it is what it is, and, you know, we can't do anything until contract negotiation comes around. You know, sure, we could put a grievance in and everything, but assuming they don't do anything at the lower level, which is very likely with this particular company, once it gets up to the higher level, it'll drag on for some. We've got a grievance that's going on from back before the company even started that's still dragging along up in Atlanta, so, you know.
But that's a very interesting point, and it is something that those involved and interested in workers' rights should be paying attention to. Because, you know, I mean, what does that mean in the real world for you, Vince? If you come down sick and you call and you say, I've got it, do you want me to come to work anyway? They're going to say, yeah, come on.
No, what they're going to do is they're going to say, we can't tell you to come in. That's what they're going to say. We can't tell you to come in. They're not going to tell me not to come in. What they're going to do is tell me, you know, we have an attendance policy. You know what it is. They're not going to tell me to come in. They're going to be very careful to skirt, because if they tell me to come in when I'm sick, then I've got grounds. If somebody else gets sick and dies from it, all of a sudden they've got a massive legal liability on their hands. So all they will tell you is you know what the attendance policy is. And that attendance policy says technically I shouldn't come to work, but it also says that if I take time off, it does count against me. So it's, you know, they're being very careful to skirt that right now. And
God, only in America.
Yeah, I know.
Man, that's revolting.
And I know they're doing it in my job. I'm pretty sure they're probably doing it in other jobs. And I mean, you know, let's even look at it this way, you know. There are a lot of people, I'm lucky in that once I hit my 1 year mark, I get paid sick time. You know, who around here right now has got, you know, got to put food on your family, you know, in that uniquely American situation? How many of those people don't get paid sick time and can't afford to take the time off? You know, they will sit there and they will work their butts off until they just literally can't drag themselves out of bed. And then they will, as soon as they have the capability of standing up without falling back down again, their butts are going to be hitting the work floor again because they've got to, because they don't survive otherwise.
You are sadly correct.
There has got to be, if we're going to be serious about containing a pandemic, and hopefully they would be serious about this before it became an issue, but even, you know, once crap hits the floor, and, you know, if we end up back into a repeat of, you know, the turn of the century with the whole Spanish flu thing, or early century, or whatever the heck it was, you know, they're going to have to say, you know, look, we can't allow these types of policies, and we're going to have to do something to ensure that, you know, one, these people who do get sick, you know, and this goes back to the whole good, this is why we need a national health care system, because, you know, we got to say that if, you know, we're going to contain this, then we have to stop the spread, and that means encouraging people, not discouraging people, to stay home and work on getting better instead of working on just getting good enough that they can keep going and still coming back in and infecting people when they're still technically sick. You know, right now the system is set up to encourage them to go around and infect more people, and that's a very, very, very dangerous thing when you're dealing with something like this, I think.
Oh, yes, and frankly, I'm glad you brought this up, because we don't know what's going to come of this. It may be nothing, but it may be something.
One would hope.
And if it is something, it is something, among other things, that has to be dealt with. And with that in mind, golly Moses, what's it? You know, and it goes back to that business with, again, Arlen Specter and Susan Collins demanding that $780 million in pandemic preparedness be pulled out of the stimulus bill. Yeah, because somebody, you know, you're bringing this up, Vince. And it's something that a working person would think about, but it has been thought about at the highest levels of government, and that's why it made its way into the stimulus bill. Because a disastrous outbreak of disease in this country economic apocalypses seldom have a single father, and it's usually a perfect storm of things. You know, 1929 wasn't just the stock market crash. It was a combination of events. And so too, as the economy tries to get back on its feet, a sudden breakdown in the workforce could put paid to all of that. And so somebody has to be thinking about this stuff, and we have Arlen Specter and Susan Collins to thank for the fact that we can't. Because that wasn't just $780 million that was going to be called pandemic preparedness, and it was going to go out in gumball machines.
Right.
There was real work going to be done with that. Real skull sweat, real questions going to be answered, real plans put in place. I mean, frankly, a pandemic preparedness for me, well, look, I've been trying to, you know, I like to compare and contrast and, you know, what is this like? Under Bill Clinton elevated FEMA to a cabinet level position.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he got into office, George Bush demoted FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And made it a stepchild of Homeland Security.
Right. And we all know how well that worked out.
Heck of a job, Brownie. Now, I don't know what Barack Obama has done about it, but I do know that I do know that this is the same sort of thing. The Republicans have once again made a disaster more likely. Rather than being prepared, you know, rather than being prepared for something like Katrina, they claimed that, oh, that's wasted money. And they took all the data and all the reports and hustled it off to a guy whose last job had been president of the Arabian Horse Association. And now, once again, they have tried, under the banner of being fiscally responsible, the Republicans need to take ownership of the fact that if this thing does get worse, it will be their fault.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, I'm sure...
Well, we don't want to play the blame game.
Unless we're blaming Democrats, of course.
Well, there's that. But it just, it makes me nuts.
Yep.
It makes me absolutely crazy. Oh, by the way, after you called the last time, I was told, and you were gone before I could say it, but we had an emailer, I believe it was David in Tennessee, who said, do remind Vince that he is now a citizen of the largest city in South Georgia. That Jacksonville, you know, Jacksonville ain't... It's kind of one of those hybrid places.
Mm-hmm.
It's Georgia while it's in Florida.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because, you know, even when I lived in Georgia, Jacksonville was still the biggest city to us. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, even when I lived in Georgia, it was technically, for all intents and purposes, a suburb of Jacksonville. Everybody who wasn't in the military basically worked in Jacksonville around there. So.
Exactly. And, of course, every year in Jacksonville, they host the world's largest cocktail party in fall. When Georgia and Florida play.
Right. And speaking of that conversation, we had another wonderful person added to our statistic up here the other day.
Yes.
The kind of irony that makes you go, ow. They were having a block party to honor a person who and remember a person who had been killed in a drive-by while he was at a block party. And there was a drive-by, and somebody was killed at that block party.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 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 yep. Gotta love it.
Oh, that's just pathetic.
Bob, I'm sure you got him lit up, and that's pretty much all I had for the time being. You're doing great as always. So is your kid, and I hope everybody's doing good.
All right, thanks, Vince. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Hey, and glad to see you. Glad to see you in the chat room too.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to get around now that my schedule is letting me. I don't know how long this is going to actually last for, but while I'm doing it, I'm trying to peek in while I can. But yeah, just hi to everybody, and you guys are doing a bang up job. And like I said, for this whole Spectre thing, you know, before we jump on the thing of, you know, completely trying to, you know, crucify the guy, like I said, I'm willing to see what he's going to do. You know, things have a way of changing when you do that. On the other hand, then again, we also had Lieberman, so you never know. Could go either way.
Yeah, and for my money, I'm willing to wait, but I really, really, really want Pennsylvania Democrats to turn up the heat as far as employee free choice is concerned.
Absolutely. If he signs up for the job, then he's got to be able to, you know, if he's going to cook, he's got to stay in the kitchen to do it.
Absolutely. Take care, Vince. Right. Good hearing from you.
Around, whatever.
All right.
See you later. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Vince calling from the largest city in South Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah, it's about 25 minutes before the hour. And, well, let's take our halfway through the program break. And come back to your calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to go on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. And email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
My daddy played poker in the woods, they say, back in his younger days. Prohibition was the talk of the rich folks' walk to the woods where my daddy stayed. Jugs and jars and shiners, these old boys here, they ain't miners. They came from the 29ers that didn't take a hole in the ground to put the bottom in their face. Take your skin, deal from the bottom, put the ace in the hole. One hand on the jig, but you never do know. Son, come running, you better come quick. This rocket moonshine is making me sick. Chains on the door, couldn't get in. I could see he tried. The shadows of the cage around the 40 white light.
It's Tuesday, April 28, 2009.
Swine flu monitoring is pork, said the Republicans. California to kill corn ethanol? Plus, a tribute to our dear friend John Gideon.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi, a very difficult day. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, these Green News headlines.
Well, the big deal this week is the sudden emergence of the specter of pandemic flu, first reported over the weekend. At least 140 people have died in Mexico from a never-before-seen strain of swine flu that has spread to nations around the world. We're still in the initial stages, so there's no confirmed source for the outbreak. But Tom Philpott over at grist.org has been the first to point to an American-owned industrial pig farm near the Mexican village where the outbreak originated. Now, food scientists have long warned about the use of giant feedlots called concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs for short, where animals are kept in close confinement, which is why the animals have to be given mega doses of antibiotics, which has been implicated in the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria like MRSA. Now, the timing of this swine flu outbreak is a bit politically inconvenient for Republicans because they mocked the funding of pandemic flu monitoring programs in the stimulus bill, and they succeeded in stripping those funds.
They stripped the funds for that, and they mocked volcano monitoring,
right.
And that blew up.
Yeah, we talk about that. Republican Governor Bobby Jindal had mocked funding for volcano monitoring just days before Alaska's Mount Redoubt erupted. So I think the lesson here is that Republicans need to stop mocking disaster funding.
Exactly.
Because their track record is really too good right now. The California Air Resources Board, in a landmark ruling last week, became the first state to establish a low-carbon fuel standard. The new rule was criticized by oil and gas refiners because the new low-carbon standard calculates not only the emissions from burning the fuel, but also factors in emissions from the making of the fuel.
And was criticized by Republicans? Mocked by Republicans?
It was mocked by everybody who had something to lose in this. The emissions from farm equipment used to grow the corn for corn ethanol would also be included, which might then make it too expensive for refiners. Refiners say they won't be able to meet the new low-carbon standard if they don't get credit for corn ethanol. But the California Air Resources Board says the phase-in is very slow and should give them time to adjust. New York Times environmental reporter Andrew Revkin has exposed a major revelation buried in a federal court finding. Now, back in 1995, a powerful industry-funded group called the Global Climate Coalition had launched an aggressive PR campaign challenging the science behind climate change and then suppressed the findings of their own scientists who said, quote, the scientific basis for the greenhouse effect and the potential impact of human emissions on greenhouse gases such as CO2 on climate is well established and cannot be denied. During the extensive hearings on climate change last week, as Congress prepares to battle it out over climate change and clean energy legislation,
this was the mother of all climate weeks that
yes,
we talked about on our last Green News Report.
And there were a few moments of sheer hilarity.
There were.
Oh, yes. Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann got on the House floor and said carbon dioxide isn't bad because it's natural. Texas Congressman Joe Barton bragged he stumped Energy Secretary and Nobel Prize winner Stephen Chu when he said, where does Alaska's oil come from? And I think the secretary was more gobsmacked than stumped at that question.
Well, what was the answer? Where does Alaska's oil come
from? It's a long answer. It basically has to deal with tectonic plates and the pressure that creates
oil. And why
did
he want to know? Why did this matter?
He was trying to make a point that it was hot once in Alaska, you know, in a previous geological age, so it should be okay for it to get hot again.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
And then a congresswoman from Tennessee tried to accuse former Vice President Al Gore of profiting from his environmental advocacy and business interests.
She schooled him, didn't she?
No, she said she was only trying to clear the air of any improprieties, and Gore said everybody knew exactly what she was doing, and he reiterated for the umpteenth time that every penny he makes from his books, his movies, and even his partnership with the big consulting company all goes to charity. Now, we have the video of that exchange. Plus, it's a little long, so you'll want to go check it out online. Plus, a full plate of debunked talking points and much, much more at our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
So you mean that Al Gore's 30 years of fighting for the environment has not just been so that he could make some money selling books?
Yeah, after 25 years, suddenly he's suddenly going to make a profit. That's long-term planning, I'd say.
I thought that Republican woman had him down. She was mocking him, so you know it must be true. Okay, thank you. Yes, and check that out at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Well, the Green News Report lost a dear friend yesterday. John Gideon, co-director of VotersUnite.org and a longtime guest blogger and friend to the Brad blog, passed away suddenly. He was 62. John helped to pave the way for the Green News Report. It was his voting news segments that we did together on the radio during my stints guest hosting for John Scott, Peter B. Collins, Randy Rhodes, Mike Malloy, many others, which led to my doing a similar segment with you, Desi, focused on Green News. Just as John was a champion for clean elections, he was also a champion of a clean earth and one of the first to encourage Desi and me to expand on our Green News Report. If there's democracy in heaven, I promise you, John Gideon is fighting to ensure it's clean, fair, accurate, and transparent, and I suspect he'll even be holding God directly accountable if necessary. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And thank you, John, for the gifts and challenges you have left us. We will not disappoint. This has been your Green News Report.
Associated Press, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. Of the 20 U.S. confirmed cases, how many have been to Mexico? And also, do you have any information on the transmission? You said you believe transmission is occurring from person to person. Is it occurring past the initial infection, like person A infects person B, but is it then infecting person C? Do we know that yet? Also, I have a follow-up.
You know, I know that we have confirmation of disease in people who have traveled to Mexico, and I don't know the numbers, but I know that that is definitely the case in some of our cases, and that's an important factor to consider. We have a lot of travel to Mexico, back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico, and we certainly are looking for illness in those people. So we have asked people to test, and we're finding some illness.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. What a horrible day it is. It gets worse by the day. Each day this administration brings America closer to the brink. One moronic professor after another, destroying America's dignity and past, let alone our safety. Now, I'm going to talk about the horrible, horrible story of illegal aliens bringing a deadly new flu strain into the United States of America. Make no mistake about it. Illegal aliens are carriers of the new strain of human swine avian flu from Mexico. Make no mistake about it. Our incompetence at the CDC will hide this from you. Make no mistake about it. This is a disaster. Now, if you thought Turista was bad, wait until you get human swine avian flu from Mexico. This is the latest zoonotic infection, and I will explain to you, my listeners, on the Savage Nation, what a zoonotic infection is. This is a never-before-seen mixture of swine, human, and avian viruses. It is an influenza A virus. It is real. It is real. It's a knockout punch. The question to me is, there's only one question in my mind, which is this. Is this a terrorist attack? Did these demonic terrorists make a new form of influenza A virus never before seen, which is a mixture of human, swine, and avian viruses mixed together. I don't know. We don't have enough information. But what you do learn today on this program, and I suggest you listen very carefully, you're not going to learn on any other talk show or television show in America. And that is because I have an actual PhD in epidemiology, human nutrition, and medical anthropology from the University of California at Berkeley. Does that make me the world's leading virologist? Not at all. But it certainly makes me aware of what's going on. This new influenza A virus is potentially fatal. I will tell you that right now. There should be no trade and no travel between Mexico and the U.S. If we lived in saner times, the borders would be closed immediately.
Get out the tattered purple robe with the moon and stars and the little eight ball, magic eight ball with the crack in it that says, answer hazy, ask again later, because Bob did it again! It was on this program, I believe, last night when I said Michael Savage will call for the closing of the borders. Some right winger will declare that this is a terrorist plot. And Mexican people will be blamed for it. Now, bear in mind that I also made abundantly clear that it is looking more and more, as Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen pointed out a few minutes ago, that the real culprit in this is probably the corporate profit seekers. The worshippers of holy profit, their altars smeared in blood and feces and gore and guts and urine and sputum and vomit and death. There they worship holy profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, holy profit. And the worship of holy profit drove them to seek asylum in a country that was ill-prepared to host them, but was mesmerized by the hypnotic chant of jobs, 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 pennies on the dollar, jobs. Lured away from this country where we have at least de minimis environmental regulatory schemes and planted in Veracruz State near a place called Perote and a town called La Gloria. La Gloria. Where the flies hum in vast black clouds above lagoons of swine waste. And things like this flu strain have a place in which to grow. But that's okay. Because you see, that's a little bit complicated. Not for you. Not for me. But it's a little bit complicated. It's a lot complicated. It is impossibly complicated for your average conservative teabagging right winger. All they have such limited mental abilities, such sloshy little shivoed brains, that all they can do is look for a likely victim. And as usual, I mean, really, I joke about the tattered purple robe with the moon and stars on it. It doesn't take any real predictive ability to know that a racist will do what racists do. Snakes bite. Vipers pump venom into the body, just as Michael the Savage Wiener pumps venom into the body politic. It is Michael the Savage Wiener's goal to see people with brown skin and names that end in vowels gunned down in the streets of the United States. It has always been his goal. The Savage Wiener is a race warrior. The savage wiener is an agent provocateur. And what did I say last night that he would cite? Well, I have a doctorate in epidemiantheroplastical biology. I am an expert. Listen to me, because those clowns at the CDC won't tell you the truth.
The what, Mr. Wiener?
The truth. You know, this truth.
Mr. Wiener, are you saying the truth?
Yeah, that. The truth.
Oh, God. This is evil. And it doesn't end here.
We wouldn't worry about money. We wouldn't worry about making sure that the heroin addicts get their fixes tomorrow. We wouldn't worry about the fact that stockbrokers in New York won't get their snow tomorrow. What we'd be worried about...
Snow, that is a hip 1980s keen hip cat word for cocaine. Just in case you were wondering, because I am so with it, you know. I have been with it since I was writing postcards to Allen Ginsberg, telling him that I would like to stick my camera up his hind end and take some pictures. Yes, that's how hip I am.
About is the public health, but since we no longer have a public health department in America, since the CDC has long been compromised and has become anything but a public health agency, more like a, there's no longer a public health agency. Public safety is the last thing on its agenda. The most important thing is the gay agenda and making certain that nobody talks about AIDS. What is interesting to me is that Mexico has not suffered a serious flu epidemic before, which leads me to ask something that the dingbat running Homeland Security, who is attacking U.S.
Dingbat. He's got a lot of nerve talking about the dingbats. I mean, there's bats in his belfry. He's got a cathedral. He's got Notre Dame cathedral's way to belfries. And he's Quasimodo up there ringing for all his weight. Up amongst the bats.
Marines, returning soldiers, anti-abortion activists, and anti-immigrant activists. Why don't you do your job, Napolitano, you bum, you? And why don't you ask yourself, you dumb fool, you, could this be a terrorist attack?
Oh, another one! It was big, and it was fat, and it was a hanging curve out over the plate about belt high, and right in my wheelhouse, and what? Over, oh! Oh, look at him! Look at him! Oh, he took it opposite field!
That's just... these people are too easy. They're wing nuts. Hate is all they have.
Now, let's see here. On a continuum at this point, and... this is just for comparison purposes. He didn't say the savage wiener. There, you can go and search his archives if his archives are there. These people really don't like being recorded. God bless Media Matters for America for making this stuff available to people like me and you. There are no shows in which the savage wiener talks about the incompetence of Michael Brown or the Bush administration as Katrina or the after effects of Katrina devastated the lower Ninth Ward and all of New Orleans. Those shows don't exist. I don't mean that the archives don't exist. I mean Michael the Savage Wiener never did those shows. Because the deaths that happened as a result of Katrina and the after effects of Katrina were the fault of people for having dark skin. On the other hand, Janet Napolitano is a bum. You're a bum, you dumb, stupid bum. Because she doesn't have troops on the border randomly gunning down people whose names end in vowels. No, really.
Through Mexico. Could our dear friends in the radical Islamic countries have concocted this virus and planted it in Mexico, knowing that you, Janet Napolitano, would do nothing to stop the flow of human traffic from Mexico, and they are a perfect mule perfect mules for bringing this virus into America.
I know it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel to bring reality into a conversation about the savage wiener. But most, if not all, of the cases of this flu strain that have come to the United States have not come from Mexican immigrants. They've come from American turistas. Just saying. Because it's true. The perfect mule turns out to be a New York City school kid on spring break going to Mexico. Not some day laborer trying to find a $3.50-an-hour job swabbing toilets in San Diego. But those are facts, and facts don't get in the way of the savage wiener.
But you wouldn't think that way, would you? Because you are incapable of protecting America's homeland, Napolitano. We're talking about the new flu strain that is emerging out of Mexico. And our incompetent, corrupt CDC has issued no travel restrictions. Do you hear this? No warnings have been issued about travel to Mexico by our corrupt, incompetent, so-called scientists at the CDC. Yet in Mexico, 6.1 million students were kept out of daycare centers. But in America, the lying thieves in the U.S. government have nothing to say because the bottom line is more important. You cannot stop the flow of people, drugs, and whatever. After all, our commerce depends upon this flow of drugs, so you can't tell people not to go or come from Mexico.
Now, wait a minute. Is he arguing for legalization of, among other things, cannabis? Well, no. He's not, because, you know, that's those degenerate liberal red diaper dopa babies. That's what they do. They smoke that dope. Right wing hate radio is a pretzel factory. It's like a very grotesque version of those videos you can find of that beautiful young Eastern European girl. Who's some sort of contortionist and can put, like, her big toe behind her heel and stuff. It's a paradox wrapped in the conundrum, shrouded in an enigma, to paraphrase Winston Churchill. That's what right-wing hate radio is.
This virus has had a unique combination of gene segments not seen in people or pigs before.
Michael, if that really is your name. It's true. The virus does have a unique combination that's never been seen before. And it's so unique that, in fact, watch this. I'm going to use the Fox style manual. It's so unique, in fact, that some people say that it has to have been engineered by human beings. Here's a hint for you, Michael, if that really is your name. There's no one in a cave in Pakistan or the frontiers of Afghanistan who has the technical know-how or the laboratory sophistication to do this stuff. There are only a few places on the planet with the sophistication to do this stuff. The vast majority of those places are controlled by the acolytes of Holy Prophet. They aren't our Islamo-fascist friends in... No. They're corporate America who kisses their kids on the way to work every morning and says, study hard, be good, I'll be home soon, and goes to work checks out the Wall Street Journal, makes sure that their stock portfolios are in good shape, or at least okay shape compared to the rest of us, gets on the phone and says, hey, how's that new flu virus coming along? Oh, really? Good. We're still playing golf Saturday? Yeah? Yeah, I got us a tee time for 7:45. That way it won't be so hot by noon when we're finishing up. We won't have to burn up in the middle of the day. You'll be there? Good. Hey, I tell you what, after the round, we'll have a few beers in the clubhouse, and then we'll go to the 19th hole for lunch, my treat, okay? Good, thanks. Oh, what's that? Oh, some of our flu virus got loose? Damn, it's not going to mess with our golf date, is it? Good. Because you know what? I got this new driver, and I mean, I don't slice anymore. It's amazing. And I'm putting it way out there. What? There's people dropping dead like flies in Mexico? Well, they're Mexicans, aren't they? Yeah. And have you tried the new Titleist? Well, you got to. They got this 100 compression ball that's got the soft touch on the putting green of like, you know, something with, you know, 80 compression. It's like a wound ball, only it's a two piece. Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, it's spread to, well, listen, do me a favor. After lunch here, put out a press release saying we know nothing about any swine flu in Mexico. Would you do that? Okay, great. Looking forward. Listen, I can't wait. I got these new plaid slacks to wear on the golf course. Man, am I styling.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. It's so cool. So, you know, I'll be the guy. Yeah, I'll meet you there 7:45 Saturday morning. Right. And that's how it works. That's where the terrorists live. They don't live in a cave in Pakistan. They live in a nice suburb. And they play golf. And they go shopping and they look for bargains and they got a 62-inch LCD screen TV hanging in their playroom. And they leave lights on all over the house because they don't give a rat's rear end what happens in Appalachia. Their whole lives are terrorism, but they feel really good about it, and they're called things like pillars of the community, and you can't keep them out of church on any time that the doors open because they're Christians. That's where the trouble's coming from in America. That's where the trouble's coming from in the world. A million dead civilians in Iraq, because the Southern Baptist Convention told George Bush that it was okay to start that war because Peter owned a sword. Yeah, I wish I was kidding, but I ain't. So we'll take a little break. We'll come back with hour number three. Your comments are always welcome. 877-443-2366 or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn. Listener-supported. And going strong for coming up on 4 years. I'm Bob.
I have been traveling quite. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The swine flu outbreak raises a lot of fears. Here's one I got. The Pentagon may be taking over more and more of our civil society in this crisis. Back in 2002, President Bush created NORTHCOM, the Pentagon's Northern Command, which has jurisdiction over the United States. And NORTHCOM's been running preparedness drills in the event of a flu pandemic for at least the past 3 years. Making things more alarming, NORTHCOM got assigned its own fighting unit 7 months ago, the Army's 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team, which had spent much of the last 5 years battling it out in Iraq. It doesn't take much of a leap to contemplate the possibility that if the flu pandemic explodes, NORTHCOM might be in the streets and in our faces. Testifying in March, General Victor Renwart, head of NORTHCOM, said it'll provide assistance in support of civil authorities during an epidemic, and when requested and approved by the Secretary of Defense or directed by the President, federal military forces will contribute to federal support, he said. Exactly what that means, I do not know, but it sure makes me uneasy. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, it's really three quarters of an hour, number three. But, you know, who's counting? Tuesday night on the horn. Glad you could be along. You just heard some rather disturbing information coming from Matt Rothschild at the Progressive. And, you know, he's always got some great on-point stuff. Just a program note for you. You might want to be make sure that you're tuned in on Tuesday, May the 12th. Matt will be my guest for probably a good solid half hour talking current events and talking about the 100th anniversary edition of the Progressive that they've put out to mark their, curiously enough, 100th anniversary. Just set that conversation up earlier today. I think it'll be a real dandy, and you'll want to be on hand for it, because Matt is a darn smart guy. So, you know, just a little heads up. And another heads up and a reminder, Guy James is out all of this week. He's out having to earn his daily bread, and that has put him on the road and unable to do a show during during this week, but he will be back right as rain next week. Well, come rain or come shine. In the meantime, critic at large, Reverbo, is on the line with us. Hey, Reverbo, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, what's happening, man?
You know, just wing nuts.
That news item of Matt's, was that his name?
Yeah, Matt Rothschild. And The Progressive, by the way, is a great magazine. Progressive, Grist, Mother Jones, The Nation, probably my four favorites.
Yeah, The Nation's always been good. But that sort of leads into my intro to my talking about this with the military and all. You know, I don't know what these people think, but I happen to know this, and I'm sure you know this too. Chemical biological weapons, if that's what we want to talk about, those are under the domain of military-industrial complexes of extremely modernized and industrial first world nations. These don't spring up out of the middle of, fill in the country. Now, you could possibly, deliver them in a unique way. You know, if you had it in mind to attack a country with something like that. But as far as, where these things, how this thing started and in what laboratory, what is the wiener's insane? Well, what else is there?
Right. And the breaking news is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only place these things are made are in, like, Fort Detrick, Maryland, and in some lab outside of Moscow, and no doubt.
Now, I'm told by Lottie in the chat room, whom I trust on this kind of stuff, that it is possible for a high school student with a cache of fertilized chicken eggs and just a little bit of basic know-how to pull this stuff off. But you've got to have... There are logistics involved. You've got to have the guy in the cave in Pakistan with the fertilized chicken eggs and a little bit of know-how to pull it off, and then he's got to get it here. And that is no small feat.
You got to have an epic day.
Yeah.
If that's how you're going to do it, I mean, if it's one of these spy novels actually come to life, man, you have to have an epic day. You have to have the kind of day like Lee Harvey Oswald had. You kind of have to have the kind of day like Timothy McVeigh had. Like, here's this guy. There's no reason on earth. You got to have the day like Doc Ellis had. Okay? Our LSD pitching friend.
Yes.
Oh, God. Otherwise, the reality of how this thing got here is just as scary, really, and it's just as sad. I mean... these people, they're just playing Russian roulette with the world and our lives. You go down there, you take production out of our country because of those just annoying environmental regulations and just all those annoying labor laws, and you just keep your fingers crossed, I guess, that, people are running things, in a healthy way. I think it's insane.
And that's, insane is the tip of the iceberg, isn't it?
I mean, we're lucky we haven't, something that's like this doesn't happen, every couple of years.
Well, the what was it that the Bush administration was so fond of saying? We've got to get everything right, and they've only got to get one thing right. But still, it would take a perfect storm. I find it much more likely. And see, I'm one of those people who, and you may be familiar with it. I'm a big believer in Occam's razor. The simplest answer.
Simplest explanation
is most likely, and the simplest answer is that this is a case of corporate negligence. Because corporations do negligence before they do breakfast.
Works for me.
That's why, for instance, when corporate pharmacology comes out with a vaccine, they have to get a sweetheart deal from the Congress saying, oh, by the way, if this kills you, you can't sue. and it's all done under the guise of being pro-business. Well, you know, they won't develop these vaccines if people sue them if they kill them. Huh? How about they won't get sued if they're not negligent? But, you know, I guess that's entirely too simple. Because when corporations get big, corporations, you know, and I can't reinforce this enough, corporations' only purpose, and you know this, Reverbo, I'm not telling you anything.
There's hands waving in the back, yes, please call it. I think everyone knows what the answer to this is.
Their only purpose is profit. In fact, a corporation that pursues ethical decisions stands a good chance of being sued by its own stockholders.
But I think in the world of economics, that is their only purpose. That's their proper purpose. And our purpose is to put some regulations on them so that they don't unleash any more swine flu. And everybody will be happy.
You know, that just makes so dadgum much sense to me.
I like the way when we hear these sentences, like these pronouncements, you know, unless we can keep polluting, our standard of living will just go down.
Yeah, well, that's why they had to go to Mexico. You know, let's bear in mind that we're talking about Smithfield Meats, the wholly owned corporate captive. What was it? Granjas Carol. Well, every time, you know, it's a good time to remind Reverbo that any time you find someone who calls himself a conservative, and I forget who promulgated this idea, but I saw it years ago, and it's stuck in my head because it's so damned accurate. Every time you see someone touting their conservatism, if you drill down deep enough, what you'll find, Reverbo, is that what they are actually advocating for is cheap labor. And the bottom line reason for American corporations to go south of the border is cheap labor, and corollary to that cheap labor is the fact that there's no regulation, because if there's no regulation, then the labor becomes cheaper, because then you can abuse your workers, you can abuse your work site, you can abuse the surrounding environment, you can have vast lagoons of pig poo with the absolute toxic clouds of flies humming above them. You can do all that. You can even do some of that in America, but not being able to do as much of it as you want is enough to push you as a corporation across the border.
Well, you can do it here, but there should be people who are going to go after you if you do. Down there, well, I mean, there's no law.
But we just spent 8 years having the entire apparatus that would go after somebody disabled and disassembled. You know, Tar Heel, North Carolina. Where the Smithfield kill plant is, the Hogschwitz. You can smell it long before you see it.
Tell me about it.
The same thing is true in Franklin County, Alabama, where there's another huge hog slaughter joint. Once again, non-union, therefore nobody, you know, the workers have no incentive to keep an eye on the employer. You can do it, but it's just a little bit more difficult than it is to completely demean your labor force and terrorize them into not saying anything, even when their family becomes sick and dies over the few pesos that you are grudgingly cranking out every couple of weeks or so.
We need to change that, change the pronouncement. Unless we can keep polluting, our profits will go down. That's what they should say.
Yeah, and they kind of do. I mean, I'm not trying to hijack the topic or anything, but I just got a little news a few minutes ago. The Obama administration, you know, you said you can do it in America. Wow, you can really do it in Appalachia, Reverbo. It was back on February 14th when I had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy over the Fourth Circuit ruling that overturned U.S. District Judge Robert C. Chambers' ruling that would have required the Army Corps of Engineers to, you know, be a little more detail-oriented as far as doing environmental impact statements and review of valley fill permits, you know, where they bury streams of the United States.
Right.
Of course, there was a petition for rehearing filed, and everybody said, oh, what's the Obama administration going to do? Well, this just rolled in from Ken Ward Jr., who is the environmental reporter for the Charleston Gazette, who is doing probably more on this topic than anybody else in the country. He's reporting that the Obama administration has filed a brief with the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that actively opposes any further consideration of the decision that overturned Judge Chambers' ruling. The brief filed by the DOJ attorneys on behalf of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says, and I quote, and, you know, what a slap in this face is to everybody in Appalachia. I mean, what a big old sinus oyster right smack between the eyes. This case does not merit further review.
This is the Justice Department release? This is what they said about it?
Yes.
Okay.
This case does not merit further review. People living, school children living at the foot of three billion gallons of toxic goo do not merit further review. People living on and around Coal River Mountain, whose lives will be devastated and destroyed by mountaintop removal, do not merit further review. There's some more of that change I can believe in.
You're not.
So yeah, I mean, my point is, yeah, you can do it here. You can do it here as long as the here where you're doing it is smack dab on top of poor people, you know. But don't let it get on top of anybody with money, or they will stop your ass.
I'm sorry. That's not good.
Yeah, it's a little hard to stomach. You know, I'd like to hold my grandbabies and have my children and my wife around me and look at those sleazy little bastard DOJ lawyers and say, tell these guys they don't merit further review, you jackass, you evil son of a bitch. Tell them, look at my little 2-year-old granddaughter and say, you do not merit further review.
Don, even with the incidents with the coal sludge and with the coal plants already this year, you know, on top of that, well, it's very simple. You got to buy some legislators of your own, like you said before. That's the way the game
is. And we just don't have the walking around money to do it, dadgummit.
Well, that's tough, yeah. But that's the only way to do it, I guess.
Kind of a hard pill to swallow.
Well, it is, and if the founding fathers are turning over in their graves about it, but there's just too much dirt on top of them. They're going to stay buried. We got to get our checkbooks out.
Yeah, it's like that parody of an old Elvis song. Can't do nothing about it until it get dug up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he's pushing up bindweed himself. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, they don't give a poop about us.
Kind of obvious, isn't it?
Kind of obvious. She's sort of taking all the spunk out of my call. I don't know what to do with
it. See, I did it to you again. I didn't mean to. Get back on track. It's okay. No, really, I didn't mean to hijack the topic, but when you talk about the fact that, you know, look, let's be clear. The only reason they do it here, you know, mountaintop removal and stuff, if they could export the mountains and put them in Mexico and blow them up there, they would. I know that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but they would. Because, you see, a few years ago, Reverbo, we caught them. We caught Massey Energy recruiting non-English-speaking Hispanics to come and work in their death holes. Now, you know me. I'm not anti-immigrant. But the fact of the matter is, you can't take a human being who does not have command of the English language and put him in as deadly a situation as coal mining and expect not to have a rather tragic outcome. But they wanted to bring them here because Massey Energy, see, Massey has to pay relatively good money to the people that work for them in order to keep those people from unionizing and getting UMWA wages. So they actually have to pay more
to their workers to keep them out of the union, and then they'd have to pay them in the union. All right? But they like them to be non-union, and they'll pay that little bit of extra money because that way they know that you know, if something's unsafe, if there's no union, the guy can't stand up and say, boss, you know, you got a problem over here, because then okay, son, you got a problem? Well, we got a problem with you working for us. See you later. Collect your pay, and we're going to fight you on unemployment, too, for insubordination. So Massey didn't like paying those wages, and the only way they figured out that they could not pay those wages would be to bring in the economically desperate immigrants who did not speak English and put them on job sites where they would be dying like flies from nothing more than their lack of command of the English language. So I'm not kidding when I say that if there was some way to transport Appalachian Mountains to Mexico or Kuala Lumpur or Vietnam, Massey Energy would, by God, do it.
If there was a way that the Holiday Inn could ship their hotel rooms to Mexico to get them cleaned and then ship them back here the next day so I could stay in it because I got reservations tomorrow, they would do that.
Yes. This is the nature of corporate behavior, anti-labor behavior. All of this stuff, you know, the North American Free Trade Act, it's gonna level the playing field in North America and be good for all of our countries. Well, no, that's... And see, I understand how you could be sort of an intellectual liberal and say that, because it makes sense on an intellectual level, but it fails to take into account the reprehensible profit-driven conduct of American corporations, whose only goal is to drive down the cost of labor in order to maximize profit. How is it that that's so easy for you and me to see and everybody in the Horn audience, but it's such a daggum challenge for the rest of America?
Because the rest of America is, because we know the answer. Because they've allowed themselves to become distracted and they're too busy feeding their families. And
Jesus didn't say nothing about joining no union.
Yeah, they're just, I don't know, they're like lambs to the slaughter is what they are. You can't have a functioning democracy without an informed electorate. What else did he say? You can't, nobody has quotes like this anymore.
No, sadly, no.
People don't even know this. This stuff is like an old fairy tale. They don't even study civics. They don't study the Constitution anymore. This is like, these are like these old guys. They almost didn't even exist anymore. We don't even bring them up anymore. You know, this the history of the United States is really the history in the last 30 years. Anything else, forget it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, in any list of, you know, the 100 greatest of all in America, invariably they will, those lists, whether it's the 100 greatest songs, 100 greatest books, whatever, they're invariably populated by things that happened in the last 75 years. You know, is there anybody out there that will, you know, look, Huckleberry Finn. There is no greater piece of literature ever written in the English language by an American author than that book.
It's a doozy.
But when you look at a list of the 100 greatest whatever, and Huckleberry Finn is ninth behind the Fear of Flying.
Whose list is this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm making it up. But I mean,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
I mean, we can do this. 100 greatest American. No, you don't spell American that way. Novels. There it is. Amazon's 10 greatest American novels. Any bets?
I'm going to try to guess what some of them are in the top five. I mean, are we going to have any Faulkner in there? Is there going to be any...
Let's see. Number 10, Call It Asleep. Call It Sleep, Henry Roth. Number 9, The Assistant. This is Amazon's list. The Assistant by Bernard Malamud. Miss Lonely Hearts and the Day of the Locust by Nathaniel West is number 8. Beloved by Toni Morrison is number 7. Wings of the Dove by Henry James. Herzog by Saul Bellow is number 5.
Ernest Hemingway's In Our Time is number 4. The Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald, is number 3. An American Tragedy by Theodore Dreiser is number 2. And Absalom, Absalom is number 1.
I don't know what to do with any of that. There's a few classics in there.
There are, then there's this. The 100 Best Novels, period, by the Modern Library. I got to share this with you. This is just going to slay you. We're just going to do the top 10.
Go do it.
The board, the Modern Library Board's list, number 10, The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. No fight, no argument there.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, Sons and Lovers by D.H. Lawrence. Yeah, okay. Number 8, Darkness at Noon by Arthur Koestler. Okay, I'm going to betray my ignorance. Haven't read it. Number 7, Catch 22, Joseph Heller.
Yeah, put it on the list.
Yeah, it ought to be higher. Number 6, The Sound and the Fury, William Faulkner. Number 5, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. Number 4, Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov. Number 3, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce. Number 2, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. And number 1, Ulysses. Now, see, if I had my way, The Sun Also Rises would be in there somewhere. But it is. It's on down the list.
Better list than the first one you read.
Yeah, well, wait. Okay, so that's the board's list. Those are the people who are professional readers of novels. Okay, you ready for the reader's list?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is, you know, the vast reading public. These are the people who have been exposed to American telemedia, American for-profit broadcasting, et cetera, to the point that their brains have been shivoed. Some I agree with.
See the movie, now read the book.
Right. Number 10. Remember number 10 was The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck?
I do.
Number 10 is Fear by L. Ron Hubbard. Number 9 is Mission Earth by L. Ron Hubbard. Number 8 is We the Living by Ayn Rand. Number 7 is Anthem by Ayn Rand. Number 6 is 1984 by George Orwell. Number 5 is a little glimpse of hope, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. I really think that should be on the top 10 in the board's list. Number 4 is The Lord of the Rings. Okay, I love The Lord of the Rings. Top 10 literature of all... No.
No.
Number 3... You just get ready to put your foot in the bucket and sing any minute now, Reverbo. Number 3 is Battlefield Earth by L. Ron Hubbard. Number 2 is The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Wow.
Now, this is the vast reading public's top 10 list. You ready for number 1?
No.
Here's a hint. It ain't William Faulkner. And it ain't James Joyce's Ulysses.
And it probably ain't Mark Twain.
Nope. Atlas Shrugged.
Atlas Shrugged. Ayn Rand once again. Man, what is it? It's quite the battle between Rand and Hubbard, huh?
Yeah, but if you think about it, they're the same animal. Because that enlightened selfishness, or whatever it is that crazy old coot woman coined the term for, anarcho-positive, I don't know, is the same thing that's going down with Scientology. You know, there's a lot of irony, too, because remember in the smart people's list, Brave New World is number 5. In the moron list, it's number 18.
Moron list. I like that.
Well, I mean, come on, it is.
Of course it is. That could be a regular. I like that. I want to see that. That should be on the horn. We need to have a moron list. I'm liking this more and more.
I mean, I just, look. I how I like to tie things together. Even though I don't gamble, I guess I've got a little bit of a wagering urge in me. If you were a competent burglar, Or I were. Let's implicate me and not you, Reverbo. If I was a competent burglar and I got out my burgling tools and my cat burglar suit, trust me, you don't want to see me in a cat suit. It's just not pretty. And I went slinking into the library. Okay, the bookshelf. There's no room devoted to books. But if I went slinking into the home of and went to the bookshelf of Michelle Bachman.
Oh, God.
Bet me, I don't find Atlas Shrugged.
I'm not betting you that.
No.
It's up there. It's right there. It's next to the fountainhead.
And Anthem. And We the Living. I mean, you know it is. Now, I mean, on the moron list, there are things I agree with. Number 14 is Dune. Number 15 is The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. But even that, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein, is a Randian-influenced thing.
I didn't read that one.
16 is Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, again, with Randian twists.
I vaguely remember that one. I enjoyed that one.
Number, on the moron list, number 26 is Shane.
Shane the Book?
Yeah. I didn't know there was a Shane the Book, but shame on me. Shane, come back, Shane! You know.
Shane the movie should be obviously up there.
Yeah, didn't they have to like dig trenches for everybody acting around Alan Ladd to walk in because he was so short?
It could be. The problem with the moron list is that they just don't understand what the list is all about. They think you can put in, like, you know, put science fiction books up right up there with, you know, Ernest Hemingway. And it's just, that's not, but I guess.
Well, see, that's kind of, it's kind of a debate that we've got going on here in the Kincaid household right now, too. My daughters are all a Twitter over the Twilight books. Is it Twilight? Yeah, Twilight. You know, Edward the Vampire, whose family only conveniently drinks rat's blood, who has a terrible crush on the adolescent girl who wishes he would hurry up and bite her and turn her into a vampire, but he doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to damn her to all eternity, yada, 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 angst, angst, angst. And so my daughters have read it. My wife is ripping through it, and she's looking at me going, well, you know, it ain't bad. I said, no, honey, it's not bad. It's Nancy Drew meets the Hardy Boys meets the Lost Boys. It's the Hardy Boys meet the Lost Boys. For teenage girls. And she said, why don't you read it? I said, because I've got more respect for myself. Why don't you read Ulysses?
God, and it says censorship is rearing its ugly head in the Kincaid household.
Well, no, I'm not telling anybody not to read it. And I understand. I'm just tickled pink that my daughters are into reading. You know, starting out with the Hardy Boys leads to Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. It really does. If you've got a little bit of the guidance going on.
I was just teasing you.
No. I know. And I know because, you know, occasionally Agnes will say, listen to this, and she'll read it, and I'll go, Jesus. She'll say, snob.
No, you don't have to tell. You've just put your finger on probably what happens. It's not that reading begets more reading. It's that reading begets more brains. Reading begets critical thinking. That the reason there's morons is because their parents didn't read to them when they were little kids, probably.
But the thing is, I want to know. And I mean, you know, we're having a good time and we're playing Reverbo.
Sure.
But there is a greater depth to this. There is a reason that the Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged and Anthem and We the Living are on that top 10 moron list. Wow, do I sound like an elitist. My bad. Those things are on that list because of the conscious effort that has been made by the right wing in this country to suffuse this nation's zeitgeist, for want of a better word, with that kind of hatefulism. And maybe that's a new word, hatefulism. It is a religion for me.
I think I'm back there with suffusing zeitgeist. I haven't gotten past that.
Sorry. You know, I'll never use a $5 word when a $10 word will do. That's definitely one of the knocks on me.
Oh God, I'm sorry. No, I don't know. There's something elitist about. I mean, I just didn't think that the average person even knew who Ayn Rand even was.
They do because it gets introduced to them in high school. Our teen blogger, Cassie, bless her heart, who one of these days is going to be president of the United States.
Okay.
She has recently been subjected by her English teacher to having to read Anthem by Ayn Rand. There is not a single arguable reason. There is not a single defensible reason for making anybody read that miserable dreck in high school. I mean, what? Were you out of copies of To Kill a Mockingbird? I mean, were you out of A Separate Piece? Were you out of Huckleberry Finn?
Okay, next thing you can say is, were you out of As I Lay Dying? And I'm going to start thinking of all these books that I had to read in the eighth grade.
Absalom, Absalom! As I Lay Dying.
Yeah, they were just...
Pride and Prejudice, for Christ's sakes. Were you out of Pride and Prejudice? If you're out of Pride and Prejudice, how about Sense and Sensibility?
The convenience store was out of those. They only had the Rand books left.
Yeah. I'm sorry, ma'am. We don't have any real literature left. You'll have to make the poor child read Anthem by Ayn Rand.
Would you like some Slim Jims with that?
They're personally satisfying.
Oh, man. You might tell the youngster there that there's entirely too much giggling and laughing coming all over the air.
Well, see, he's a...
No attention to that whole directional microphone thing. It's lost on him.
Yeah, I know. We're having that conversation a little bit. But, I mean, there's marketing tie-ins. It was selfishness. It was selfishness that Ayn Rand promoted. And you mentioning Slim, get selfish with your Slim Jim. But this stuff has just been pumped into the culture until, you know, John Galt, who is basically an anarchist, becomes a focus of praise. I mean, I've said before, you know, my wife brought that thing into the house from the library's Dear Jesus, Get It Out of This Building table. And said, here, honey, I brought you a surprise. I went, oh, no. She said, what? I thought you'd like it. I said, oh, honey, I put up with this in college. See, they didn't even make me do it in high school. And now I got to reread it because I read every book you bring me.
I'm sorry, what did you get? What did she bring you?
Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
And I, you know, there was this, you know, and it's this tome, and there was this 3-week period of my life. It was, it's just awful, and ooh.
He was cranky.
And I, you know, I would read I would read the sex scenes to Agnes, and she'd say, "Dear God, Bob, those are worse than my bodice ripping pot boilers."
You guys are desperate over there. You're reading Ayn Rand sex scenes. Oh God. And eating Slim Jims.
It's Mike and Marsha Brady in the bed, you know? I mean, hey, honey, look at this.
It's madness in West Virginia. God. Oh, God.
Well, one of these days I'll whip out the Ulysses and read that, and it'll be like, or what's worse, you know, I could be a real ass, because, see, I don't get it. Thomas Pynchon? I just don't get him. I'll whip out Gravity's Rainbow and read some of that for a while. You getting this, honey? And if she says, yeah, I get it, I'll know that I'm deficient.
No, I've missed that. There are some that I just got too scared off of just reading reviews about.
I mean, that moron list...
I haven't read any James Joyce either. I mean, I'm just going to...
Oh, well, you kind of got to. I mean, that's like a lodge thing, you know? I mean, you just have to try. You don't have to like it. You don't have to understand it. That's the bonus of reading James Joyce. You don't have to comprehend it. You just kind of let the words swim by your eyes. It's like standing in front of an aquarium, really. But, you know, I'd feel better about that moron list, Reverbo, if Green Eggs and Ham was on it.
That's a really good book. Yeah, it is missing some of those, the children's fair. It is missing some of that. I don't get, the more I'm with, the more I think about what's on there, the more intriguing it is. I thought L. Ron Hubbard, this is Scientology. There are grown people in modern industrial countries who are Scientologists. So you're going to, the next thing you're going to do is you're going to tell me that.
You know, I've got to download it. I shot it on the camera phone, or the phone camera. I'm not sure which one. We were in D.C. the last time. We've got pictures of Agnes and me in front of the Church of Scientology there right off of Connecticut Avenue. And there's one of her holding my arm as I'm I'm leaning toward the Church of Scientology with this, oh, hell, look on my face. And she's got me by the arm like she's trying to drag me away. I got to get that downloaded and put on the website.
You definitely do. So you were almost mesmerized at that moment.
Oh, I was, you know, and this little, you know, we'd been to dinner and I'd had a beer and stuff, and Agnes had had a cocktail, and so we're standing by it, and, you know, we both got cigarettes between our fingers, and this guy walks by, you know, and we're just sort of staring at it, you know, because we're from out of town, and a guy walks by on his way in and says, "It's very interesting, isn't it?" And Agnes goes, "Yes, yes," you know, just trying to be polite. He goes, well, come inside. We have free IQ tests. And Agnes looks at him and says, "My church has donuts."
I'm sorry, did you bring your checkbook? Is his next question.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're from out of town? Are you too bad? But are you such obvious goobers that it's just so clear that you're from out of town?
Oh, gosh, yes. We are country mice.
Oh, where can a person see a picture of you? Is that you in a hat and like an overcoat in D.C.?
Yeah, oh, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I noticed the camera's like a mile away. You're definitely, because you always like to put a face and like a.
Yeah, that's my Facebook. That's my Facebook Twitter creature.
I haven't. You're on Facebook too?
Yeah, Bob Kincaid.
Oh. Well, I'll have to be your friend. I'm on Facebook.
Oh, friend. Yeah, friend me up. Everybody, friend me up. Twitter. And I'm trying to get more responsible with my Facebooking and Twittering.
I don't know. Facebook, it's just brutal. I mean, it's just designed by and for eighth grade girls. I don't know if I can
do that. Oh, and ELO is reminding me in the chat room that Bob's also in a couple of horn videos. So if you look there on the website under videos, you'll probably find those too.
Okay. Well, I'm actually going up to D.C., I'll be in D.C. next week. So is there anybody you want me to say hello to while I'm up there?
Mark Levine.
Not really. I mean, if you want to just, you know, talk mountaintop removal the whole time you're there, that'd be cool.
Okay. Did you set anything up with Biden for the next time that you were up that way?
You know, we're not that far up the food chain yet, but we're trying.
Uh-huh.
Right now we're happy to just be meeting with officials from EPA and Council on Environmental Quality and Office of Surface Mining and stuff like that. But we're battling. It's an uphill battle because not only did this thing go down with the Fourth Circuit decision, does not deserve further review, but Barack Obama, President Obama, just recently appointed as the head of Office of Surface Mining one of the flacks, a woman by the name of Glenda Owens, who worked intimately with Stephen Griles to make mountaintop removal not less, but far more likely in Appalachia. And that's that change pick. Another Bush retread. And even my congressman, Nick Rahal, who's in favor of mountaintop removal, said it was a terrible choice.
If I point out that he's a politician, that doesn't make it better, does it?
No, it kind of makes it worse. That's kind of like ripping the Band-Aid off fast. Hey, Reverbo, I'm out of time, brother, but this has been a fun one.
All right, well, yeah, sounds like you don't need to make it. It's already about as personal as you can get it.
If it gets any personal, I'm going to have to, like, take toenail fungus medicine, you know?
Well, I'll catch up with you when my after my North American tour is over next week.
I want a T-shirt. The Reverbo World Tour. Keep making it personal.
Yeah. All right, Damien.
Later, Reverbo. Bye now.
Okay.
Horn critic at large, Reverbo, heading on the road to the nation's capital. That's the program for tonight. Daggum, where'd it go? Thanks, as ever, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, to John Fox, our chief engineer, show host, musician, renaissance man at large. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who literally saved liberal talk by creating the White Rose Society in 2002, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to Horn intern junior grade Ferg, answering your phone calls this evening. Thanks, as ever, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They never slow down, they never give up, and they never will. Thank you, all of you, who are stepping up so boldly and so determinedly to get us through the month of April, even as April comes to a close. We will close with a deficit, but we will close with less of one. Because of your determined efforts. And we are eternally grateful. Thank you for listening, for emailing. Thank you for participating in the chat rooms, the forum. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
Mike is on. If you can't hear me, turn off. Registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The conflict and controversy over whether or not the United States should torture people in order to get information to protect against terrorism is already in high gear in Washington, D.C. It's not a new issue. The tortures, in fact, that are being discussed happened back in 2002 and 2003. At the time, our President George W. Bush said, in a few simple words, we do not torture. But when asked at the time, what do we do? What is the nature of our interrogation techniques? He said, I'm not going to tell you. To tell you would be to ruin their effectiveness. Well, now President Obama has released the memos telling us exactly what happened. And the Washington Post, of course, has detailed for us some of these things. Everything from putting cold water on someone, 41 degrees, and freezing someone, or turning up the heat to unbearable temperatures, denying sleep for up to 11 days, to more excruciating things, beating, slapping, a practice they call walling. In other words, throwing someone against a wall time and time again. Some have mentioned chaining into stress positions, being held in cold, cramped quarters for hours on end, sometimes in extremely painful positions, sometimes with an insect in the cell, if the inmate says that he fears insects. And, of course, the most famous technique, the one that has been used since the Spanish Inquisition, the one for which Americans have been court-martialed when they did it in the Spanish-American War, the infamous practice known as waterboarding, or simulated drowning. When the Japanese practiced waterboarding on our American GIs in World War II, they were executed. Well, Now we know for certain these things have occurred. At the time, well, we thought they had occurred. I myself reported it here on the Inside Scoop. I would argue over the effectiveness of these techniques with various guests. But it's interesting, until we know they've occurred, it seems that the debate has been left by the wayside. I think Americans knew that as long as the Republicans were in power, as long as George W. Bush was in power, these kinds of things would not be investigated, let alone prosecuted. But now we have a change. Now we have a president who is committed to the rule of law. We have a populace that at least seems to believe, the majority believes, that this kind of practice should at least be investigated. But what's the next step? What's the next step? After investigation, who should be prosecuted? Should the people who carried out these techniques be prosecuted? The people who were just following orders? On the one hand, you can argue the Nuremberg principles, based on what the Nazis did, have said that we do not allow just following orders. We do not, because the people who follow orders and do awful things cannot be protected. And yet, this is not Holocaust. This is nasty things, to be sure. But the people who did it did so believing that they were indeed following the law. So what about the people who ordered it?